Blog Talk Radio.
It's January the 4th, 2013.
2013.
Yes, we have a new setup here with a microphone. We're going to see how this sounds better. That last episode we had back in December was horrendous static on the mic, so we had to do something to change this nonsense. So we'll see how this works. And Michael Lawson here. This is the last word with Thomas Wartenberry. And Thomas?
The new year.
This new year.
What are we going to do with this brand spanking new year?
How do you like my fruitcake?
Well, there's almost fruit and or cake in your fruitcake.
Almost?
But there's a whole lot of something.
Mm-hmm.
It's so moist. Mm-hmm. You could almost squeeze it into a shot.
You could almost drink it.
I'm saying it's
rum. You're almost drinking, right?
Yes. Rumorific.
So,
well, I have to tell you.
Yes.
This was a, not to disappoint, an exciting end of the year and an exciting beginning of the year.
Yeah.
We had to have drama, you know, like you were just playing some.
Some Dallas.
Some Dallas. We had to have high stakes drama at the last possible minute.
Well, I want to say that.
You know, these guys can't do anything without drama.
Well, you know, the reason why I played Dallas is because that Dallas has to be one of my all-time favorite shows. I cannot remember, and I don't remember a show, that I actually said, you know, do I need to go out or do I need to stay home and see Dallas on Friday night.
Huh.
That's how much I... Matter of fact, my cousin, Malina, and my husband, George, who's going to call in, by the way, in a little while, we used to... And when Dallas went off, in between the commercials for Falcon Crest that came on after it, we would talk about what the hell was going on with JR.
What did JR do this week?
And JR is now gone.
True.
Didn't make Christmas.
True. But you know what?
He made, I think, three quarters.
Second life after that surgery.
That's
so.
Right. He made three quarters of the next season.
Right.
And they are going to have a major funeral for him.
In the show.
In the storyline. Now, here's the thing is, do you make it out that JR got shot? Because, I mean, he was shot before.
Right.
So now, you know, he was crossing the cartel the last time he was involved. So,
Mike,
there's
only so many times that the man from Atlanta can wake up in the shower.
Yeah, he's not waking up in the shower this time because he's going to be the major star in it. And now I'm hoping, if you ever watched Dallas, remember, they had the picture of Jock Ewing over the mantelpiece at South Fork for the entire show after Jock died. the father.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are they going to have JR's picture over the mantelpiece, or will they have both their pictures over
might,
the mantelpiece? Now, I would like to have both their pictures over the mantelpiece.
I was fixing to say, it's a dynasty. Not to infringe the trademark of another show.
Yes,
you need to have both of them.
So now...
The patriarch, you know, start that hallway. You know how...
This is over the mantelpiece.
I'm just saying.
So now the thing is, it starts January 28th on TNT. You guys got to watch. Everybody out there listening, watch Dallas. JR is in the first... I think they made 10, either 8, 10, or 12. I think there's 13 in this season. I think he was in it for 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
So that means a rewrite had to come in.
Yeah.
So we'll just see.
But they'll see. You know, I mean, they've got a good storyline. But, you know, I think you're right about this. The impact of this show can't be underestimated.
Well,
this was the first soap opera at night. You remember, it changed everything. Nobody had ever done this style at night.
Right.
And it set up a whole slew of, like you mentioned, Falcon Crest. I alluded to Dynasty, but it created
Dynasty
a whole
came on Monday night, I believe.
You know, every network tried to have one, and it created a generation war for these shows. But
absolutely.
Dynasty was the first.
Dynasty Dallas.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dallas.
Yes,
I keep talking about.
I watched Dynasty, and I watched. Falcon Crest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't care too much for that spinoff of Dallas, where the brother that JR chased off the farm was now down in someplace in L.A. or something. That was garbage.
No, Beverly Hills 90210.
No. But anyway.
Yeah. Nobody's been as vicious as JR.
But JR is somebody you love to hate.
Of course.
I mean, and the one thing about it, I loved every time he jabbed it to, what's the name? What's his name? The other guy. That was always. Oh!
Yeah, I'm going to let you hang with that South Fork.
Oh, God. What's his name? The main drubbing that J.R. Barnes, yes. When he used to give it to Barnes all the time, he didn't care what, if he lost Southpaw, he wasn't going to lose it to Barnes.
Right. Anything
but. And Barnes has come back on the show now, and he is as rich as JR, and maybe richer, and is a bad guy.
Well,
so
now,
we're going to find
course,
out.
By default, he is a survivor.
That's right.
So what's going to happen?
So we'll see. But that was a theme song for Dallas, and I need to play that to say hello, goodbye to JR. The headlines we got today.
Speaking of
headlines.
Drama.
Yes, sir. I mean, you know, we got. John Boehner.
The queen of drama.
Who cries at the drop of a hat.
Oh.
He doesn't have to go to a wedding.
Well, he only...
Or funeral.
He only...
He'll cry on cue. Birthday parties.
Someone likes him. Someone doesn't like him.
Baseball games. Football games. Someone hates me. Yeah, TV show.
Hey, by the way, did you see the stark difference? I thought this was an amazing scene. They're showing clips of the vice president with all the new people being sworn in and their families and their children. Contrast that with Boehner. It's like crying, you know. That is the stark difference between these parties, basically. You have one that is a people person, people-centric, everything about the family and family times and let's do this and let's have fun and let's be sweet and let me hold your child. And the other guy up there crying that, you know, he clung to power despite all the odds. And even though he messed everything up and has the worst performance rating ever of a speaker, he clung to power yet again. I mean, you know, that right there sums it up. Democrat and Republican.
John, don't cry for me, Boehner.
Don't cry for me.
Yep. That's who is John, don't cry for me, Boehner. And
putting the Argentina back in Congress.
putting the Argentina back in Congress.
Mm, mm,
now, we have a little tidbit of him doing this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you've come here to see your name in the lights or to pass off a political victory at some accomplishment, you've come to the wrong place. The door is right behind you. If you've come here to carry the standard of leadership demanded not by our constituents but by the times, then you've come to the right place.
Now, and after he said that, he took his handkerchief out.
Now the sniffle.
Started sniffling and drying his eyes. And
well, what I love is that he actually broke up. If you watch it, he broke up when he said the door is right behind you. And he started crying. He had to stop for a second and then continue the sentence, right? It's so, a little bit too close to home, huh, John?
I'm telling you, that is the unbelievable thing I have ever heard. It almost is like this.
I can't remember anything that happened before 2 weeks ago.
I can't remember anything that happened before 2 weeks ago.
But did you see Lawrence O'Donnell the other day when he was going through and he played that whole little part of Reed continuing on with work? Getting things done in the Senate, one after the other, bill after bill, you know. I was like, yet again, there's one man working, and there's one guy that takes off, what, 4 or 5 days a week? Hasn't passed, but
2 weeks out of every four. But yeah,
he's only passed a few hundred post office signings in his years in office.
John Boehner has been hit over the head. I mean, he's done everything. Well, you know, it's just like
Are you saying he's been teabagged?
I know exactly what he'll tell you. Lies. He was no different from any other officer in the wardroom. They were all disloyal. I tried to run the ship properly with the book, but they fought me at every turn.
It's all lies.
They all lied.
Everyone lies.
I mean, give me a break. They lied on me. They lied. They lied. They lied. He said, they fought me at every turn, but through sheer manipulation and keen cunning, I was able to prove that there was a wardrobe key.
He's able to retain his seat as king of the lies.
I mean, give me a break.
These tea baggers have draped their mantle upon his forehead, and this guy is so beholden to him. I mean, he can't do anything. He can't. This is a guy who just destroyed his own quote-unquote legacy, if he has one, as Speaker. The final death knell was what he did with the yanking of the Hurricane Sandy vote. At the last minute, after, you know, every governor and representative up there is calling him. And then he lied to their face and just said, well, and he ran for cover because he
no,
couldn't get
it's
his
because
guy.
That 67%, 67
congressmen,
those lying chicken hawk congressmen, all mostly from the South, did not want to give anything to the eastern portion of the country where they have saved their butts, because, you know, it's just like in the Civil War. And I should have had that play there, I didn't cue it up, but where Rhett Butler laughs at those fools at the party and say, oh, we're going to kick those Yankees' butts. He said, kick them with what? What do you got? You got nothing.
Yeah.
He said, well, this is the same thing here.
Yeah,
let me play this little bit thing here for you.
No, I don't see any need of that. Now that I recall, he might have said something about mess boys, and then again he might not. I questioned so many men, and Harding was not the most reliable officer.
I'm afraid the defense has no other recourse than to produce Ensign Harding.
Now, there's no need for that. I know exactly what he'll tell you, lies. He was no different from any other officer in the wardroom. They were all disloyal. I tried to run the ship properly with a book, but they fought me at every turn. If the crew wanted to walk around with their shirt tails hanging out, that's all right. Let them. Take the tow line. Defective equipment. No more, no less. But they encouraged the crew to go around scoffing at me and spreading wild rumors about steaming in circles and then old Yellowstain. I was to blame for Lieutenant Merrick's incompetence and poor seamanship. Lieutenant Merrick was the perfect officer, but not Captain Queeg. Ah, but the strawberries. That's where I had them. They laughed at me and made jokes. But I proved beyond the shadow of a doubt and with geometric logic that a duplicate key to the wardrobe icebox did exist. And I'd have produced that key if they hadn't pulled the cane out of action. I know now they were only trying to protect some fellow officer and...
Strawberries and yellow stains. That's sad.
They're all liars.
Yeah, liars. Liars.
John Boehner wants to do good. I want to do good. I want to do good. If they're all lying, they say that I didn't want to give any relief to I didn't want to give the Sandy relief any money. I didn't want to give anything to it. They're all saying, I didn't want that.
Right.
Did these people walk around like they don't care about it? But you know what? You know what? I'm the only one that can be speaker. See, none of them apply for the job. None of them apply for the job because they want me out there. They want me on that post, standing post, so they can throw darts at.
Yeah. And that poor man's the only one with geometric logic.
Yeah, I had the geometric logic. That's how I got the bill passed with pure geometric logic, and I couldn't go on to get any more money because these people they saw I tricked them and they wouldn't give me any more. But we'll take care of that because we really need to help those poor people. Yeah, these fools down there in New Orleans, Louisiana, all these in Mississippi that were killed by hurricanes, New York City and Jersey give more money to the federal government than they ever give back. They got nothing. They ain't even got cotton anymore. So they can't give nothing to the daggone treasury. All they have is the same thing that Rhett Butler said, mouth and gall. That's it. It's just unbelievable.
I think it's sad that these areas who this year, I think, are getting rid of the last Katrina cottages and everything else from the hurricane up there are holding up money for anybody else.
And they're holding up money. So I had a friend of mine, I spoke to him about a week ago, maybe.
Don't want any freeloaders.
He said, he says, it's terrible. Bob, if you're listening, I'm talking about you. He said that. They still don't have any monies to help the poor people in New York, New Jersey, and all the surrounding areas that were hit by Sandy. No, that's not President Obama's fault. He don't pass those bills. The Republicans are the ones, and you saw them, Christie. Every single Republican, Eastern Republican, was complaining about what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I texted you, Bob, but you didn't text me back.
I think Christie, King, all of them, they came out and they directly laid it on me.
Absolutely. Now they say, everything is fine now. This is true. This is the first day, Friday, of the 113th.
That is pretty funny. Friday, the 113th time. What are the odds, 113th on the 13th? What are the
odds? That's right.
It's got to mean something.
Yeah, well, we'll find out what. But we moving on now. What about John Boehner and his?
Well, look, this guy
record.
This is what I said.
As
you remember, in our best of, worst of awards show that we did.
Yeah.
I said when you said, you know, who was the worst, and everybody was drumming on poor old Romney because he's a failure of a candidate. I agree, but to me, Romney, he simply failed in his bid to run for president, but he wasn't a standing politician now. You know, he wasn't still governor. He wasn't still anything else. There was nothing you could say. His political life this year failed in X way. Boehner was. This is a man who was the head of the House of Representatives.
He's third in line for the president.
Third in line to run the country. Most powerful man in government other than the president. You could say. Because guess what?
Third in line.
No, but most powerful man, because whatever the president and his vice wants or doesn't want, he makes those laws and controls the monies for. So just like this, you know, the president could wish all day long to help Hurricane Sandy victims and not
well,
a dang thing happen.
Well, he'll actually go to someone like the finance committee, but well, he no, controls listen. It, bring it
he,
to the floor.
Exactly.
Right,
and this
the
is
floor.
A guy who so utterly failed at his job that we have the worst Congress on record. They didn't do anything. They didn't pass anything. They obstructed everything.
Everything was no.
All of their percentages are down in every category. Their approval ratings in the tank. They're just it's abysmal.
Well,
so his performance, I said, was the worst. That's why I gave it to Boehner.
Well,
the worst.
You're right, in so to speak. But since most people don't even know how to spell speaker, you know, it would to people who are in the know. Yes, you're absolutely right. Well, you should look at the approval ratings here. Approval ratings of the GOP. Since Boehner had become speaker,
the whole party
gone down 9%.
Okay.
Since the approval ratings of Congress has gone down 13%.
Again, that 13, it's magical.
And the approval rating of John Boehner went down 9% since 2013.
And here's the thing: when you're sitting at the head of an opposition to a president, and your whole party is united in that, foaming at the mouth in hatred for a moment, how could you possibly go down? How could you mess it up?
That's impossible. I mean, I don't understand.
This is like the gimme
in your own party?
Look, this is the thing. A gimme.
And this is
what
the people
this is
say.
This guy who is, I mean, they are they've got everything going for them, quote unquote, that they could ever want. You've got a African-American from the inner city Chicago who is adopted from an African communist spy guy thing, whatever.
Theocrat.
Just
country.
Everything possible you can figure. And he's named, apparently, after the head of Al-Qaeda in a weird time warp, you know, or something. You get this whole bizarre universe aligned, and you still can't even eke out a positive.
You still
percentage.
Can't win.
Oh, my God. What a failure.
But here's the thing. The president is back to where he was when he took office.
Right.
7.8% unemployment. But
well, that's the highest.
It's just like
of his whole
a huge ship. You know, the Titanic could have done nothing about hitting that iceberg because when they saw it was already too late.
Yeah.
Because it would take 6 miles for that ship to turn.
Right,
The speed it was going to go, it was going
right.
to top speed. So it never would have missed that iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is here, Obama was on top of this iceberg when he came into office.
Yeah. Well, I think that
and
it
took
was already,
4 years to turn it around.
It was already flooding.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, the problem is,
because that last
it had
year.
Hit an iceberg.
Yeah.
But the big iceberg, they didn't hit yet. Because
well,
when he came into office,
hey,
I
when
believe
Obama
it was,
came into office, he was going.
Right, right. It was
down
doing,
the side of the ship.
It was doing the scraping.
And there were alarms. Cling, 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 cling.
Because
cling.
In March 2009 was the worst time under Barack Obama that he was in office. Because before he came in, they were losing 850,000 jobs a month. Losing.
Yeah, that's the Bush years. That's...
And then he slowed it, but it took him to May. Because they was losing, in May they lost 799,000.
Right.
That was the turning point when it started to turn back around and not lose as many jobs.
Right.
So,
and then what's it up to now? They just came out with the numbers. Did they not today just release?
Yep. They came out with the numbers.
So what was the December job report?
The December job report was 155,000 jobs.
So he's added back now.
4.25 million jobs in 4 years.
Well, you're talking about he's adding back like a quarter of what he was losing per month.
Well, yeah, but they say, oh, no, it's got to be more than it should be 250,000 to keep up with inflation. Well, yeah, you're right. The problem is, though,
yeah, Yeah, but the
when you're
is,
nobody's hiring, you can't keep up with inflation. And they said they weren't hiring because they weren't sure of how the economy and the deficit. Well, now that's passed.
No.
Don't talk that nonsense anymore. And then speaking about that, deficit. The man who said this?
What?
Nobody cares about deficits. Deficits mean nothing. You know who said that? It was two people.
I'm sure it was
first person said it was in 1981, Ronald Reagan. Yeah. And the second person that said that was...
I think he was a dick.
Darth Vader himself. Yes.
Darth Vader himself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tricky Dick Cheney.
See, look.
They were saying that when the deficits overtook the surplus that Bill Clinton had built in.
Yeah.
That means it lost $5.6 trillion.
Well, let's look at this. There was almost $6 trillion in surplus under Clinton when W went in.
Yep.
So you're talking, and I'm not, I don't mean going to be maybe mythical, hoped to be already there. Boom in economy. Matter of fact, if you remember this stat, it was the best in world history, ever recorded under Clinton. We had paid off that, as you remember, they were worried under Clinton that if you paid off the entire debt, that the Federal Reserve System, I think, might collapse because there would be no debt at all, and everything works on debt. See, everything in our modern system works on what kind of
debt
and what kind of rating you have. So if we had none, they were talking about it could collapse.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Well, why are you saying that when all we hear from these people is that I couldn't handle my household that way?
Right.
Yeah, but your household is your household. 2, 4, 5 people. It ain't 300 million.
Yeah.
It's a big difference.
But again, you've got $6 trillion surplus. That means everything's paid off, and this is $6 trillion above and beyond that, just sitting in the vault. Happy days are here again. So George and Dick got in office,
George and Dick,
and they said, let's have a party.
That's right.
Now,
let's start a war.
Spend
that money.
Besides that, before we get to the wars, because that's what they always do, start wars.
Man.
Because that's a whole other side of Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney's job, basically, for the last 20, 30 years, ever since Nixon, has been war profiteering in the defense industry. He is the master. You remember, he's the architect of privatization. And the reason privatization was so important is just like with this surplus, you can't really do anything with the national surplus. It's the nation's. And you can't really do anything with a taxpayer-paid Department of Defense making money during wartime, because it's the people's property. So what you have to do is bit by bit pare it off and take each portion of it and put it in your pocket. And that means, why let the government build tanks? Why let the government build guns? Why let them make Jeeps? Why let them sew clothing? Why let them cook and serve food? Why let them build a shower?
Let's contract it out.
Hey, and guess what?
To our friends.
I own a company.
Right.
Right,
I can do that.
KBR, that's Dick Cheney Incorporated. And I'll give myself the contracts. And because that's probably illegal and you probably have a process, I'll just do it as a no-bid contract and we'll award it directly to myself. And that's what he did. But doing that was a way for them to steal all the money back. So you've got a situation where you've got all this money in there. But before I get to stealing everything in the war, because that's pure profit. That's how you make money for them, not for the people.
Mm-hmm.
They just literally gave a chunk of the surplus away to their friends and donors. And that was called the tax break that we've been talking about, with this whole fight over the fiscal cliff and everything else.
Oh, that was the tax break? Oh!
Should billionaires,
I guess I'm not one of the friends, because I ain't getting any money.
Yeah, should a billionaire pay tax? You know, like this is a whole argument. Well, under Bush, if you remember, there was so much money, you know, $6 trillion in surplus. They said, we can give a portion of it back for 1 year. And remember, they called it a tax holiday. That wasn't permanent. It was 12 months tax holiday for the rich as a thank you for a booming economy. So they got that through, and then it stayed forever. They've kept it going for a decade now, and we're still fighting about it. But nonetheless, that was just giving away some of the surplus just for friends and family. You know, it's a Christmas gift. Then on top of that, they started all the wars because that was a way for them to make money with your money. It's just redirecting your money. It's taking your money out of circulation and putting it in their pocket because somebody's got to have an electrified shower in the middle of the desert in Iraq. You know, hey, let's hire KBR. And you know what? I bet you if we fry a couple of soldiers in that electrified shower, somebody might get mad, so we better have some bodyguards standing around too. So let's hire Blackwater for that. You know, we don't want anybody to find out about it. But anyway, all of that said, not even getting to his prescription drug plan debacle and not even getting to any of the other issues that he did, this president, George W. Bush, not only spent $6 trillion in savings that we had, but he ran up a debt. How much debt did he run up there, Mike? Do you remember?
Oh, about $11
trillion. $11
trillion. Counting the
now,
surplus that he used up where that Clinton left him. So it was about $6 trillion when he did surplus. Then he ran up another $5-point-something trillion. So it was about $11.5 trillion.
So that's the amazing thing. Think about that for a minute. Not that he spent $6 trillion that was in the bank.
Oh, yeah.
He double spent it. that's mind-boggling in the extreme. Not just that you could, you know, steal all the money from the bank, but that you could wreck the entire future of the bank. You know, my God, it's amazing. How could anybody even conceive of spending that many trillions?
$12 trillion. He has no. Well, first of all, he had no idea about it. This man has an MBA.
Yeah, remember he was the
the NBA.
After all those horrible
that almost lost the Texas Rangers when he first got involved with them, and they bought him out to get them the hell out of the country because he was killing the Texas Rangers.
Because you can make more money by selling off your talented players.
Absolutely. So yeah, he sold Sammy Sosa. He sold.
I don't care about baseball. Baseball's trivial. Look, this is a guy, probably the only man in history
with an NBA president.
The only man in history that lost money with an oil company in Texas. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
How can you possibly lose money on an oil company?
He must have ran into J.R. Ewing.
Yeah.
J.R. swindled him.
Yeah.
And you can't help it if J.R. gets you. But the thing is that's how bad these deficits are. Now, but getting back to Mr. Boehner. Boehner, same thing. Anyway, 435 people were in the House.
Mm-hmm.
100 in the Senate. That's 535. Just counting the House, 435. He needed, I believe, 214 to win, to get it.
What's that? It's
217.
Right.
218 votes he needed. He only got 225. Nancy Pelosi came this close in winning the speakership in a House controlled by Republicans.
Yep.
What are we talking about here?
And, you know, I saw a quote the other day. his own members said they actually thought about teaching him a lesson, putting it to a second vote to make him know how bad it was. But then they were scared
that she would win.
If they did that,
she'd win.
They would mess up the count and she'd win. So they said they abandoned that at the last minute and got enough to eke out a victory. Now, how
these people are so stupid. Well, that's who they want serving the American public. They want ignoramuses.
if I can find this one ignoramus here, where is he at? I can't find his ignoramus here. Where is he at? Anyway, I'll find him.
Well, here. Again, but my whole problem, Mike, is that we've got under Democratic presidents, we have growth, we have job creation, we have high employment, we have money in the bank, payment down on deficits. Under the Republicans, we have almost abject theft in office, but always huge deficit spendings, unpaid for things. You know, we've had multiple wars. We've had all kinds of you remember even this, the small government guys, they're the ones that created the largest expansion of government.
That's right.
With all this Homeland Security and, you know, take your shoes off and you know, don't carry a paper cutter anywhere. You know, I mean, come on. These guys are incapable of governing. I don't understand how they ever get elected. Because, who could possibly lose $12 trillion? How is that even humanly possible?
How is it humanly possible?
Yeah. And then what gets me is that they'll turn around and blame, you know, just like you said, Obama comes in when the Titanic is impaled on an iceberg, and then they say, how dare you wreck the Titanic? Look what you did to it. Look how much it's going to cost to fix it. You know, can we raise it from the bottom now that Obama sank it? I mean, come on.
Now that Obama sank it, but then we also have our master of ceremonies. The Rush Man.
Uh-oh.
This is what the Rush Man said about this.
The Republicans keep throwing away aspects of their core beliefs under this silly belief that that's how we'll get things done. We'll finally get the what, Matt? We'll get this tax business off the table, and now we can focus on spending. We're running out of core beliefs to throw away, folks.
Like,
Obama's victory here has been massive, profound, sweeping, unbelievably large.
Now, if you have Rush Limbaugh saying that about Obama's win, what the heck? What's with the Sean Hannity?
And
I mean, the robot man.
Why are we even talking about it? These are people who proclaimed that Bush, who lost the popular vote and got sworn into office by his dad's appointee in the Supreme Court, they called that a mandate, if you remember.
Yes.
That was a mandate to do whatever they wanted, like steal $6 trillion.
But he only got 286 votes.
And this guy walked in with millions, right, during one of the worst economic seasons of our entire country, during multiple wars, being the pariah of the other party, and, you know, they couldn't muster within even a few million of the guy. So talk about your mandates. I'm just, again, there's some disconnect between reality and a Republican, and it's getting embarrassing.
Getting embarrassing.
It's been embarrassing for a long time, Mike. I agree.
It's been embarrassing for a long time. We have these, and if I could find this one thing on this moron, here he is. I don't know how I missed it, but, you know, here's a guy. I want to tell you how. Now, what happened the last time they did not want to increase the debt? What happened? What happened the last time?
We
the world almost melted down.
Yeah, and we drove our respectability and our world standing into the side of a wall.
Well,
that's what we did.
Well, here's somebody.
First time we've ever been downgraded.
Who doesn't care? Listen to this.
Our opportunity here is on the debt ceiling. The president's made it very clear. He doesn't even want to have a discussion about it because he knows this is where we have leverage. We Republicans need to be willing to tolerate a temporary partial government shutdown, which is what that could mean.
The ghost of Newt Gingrich.
Every time these guys look like they're trying to go down the street narrow, somebody pulls them back down in the hole. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, the answer to all of our problems is to shut the government down, Mike. That's what we need.
Why not?
Hey, more dysfunction. More failure. You know, when the going gets tough, the tough just give up, Mike, and hide in a hole. That's why I said the other night that the new emblem shouldn't just be an elephant. It should be an elephant with its head in the ground like an ostrich. Because I don't understand. I can't get my head around these people, especially these ultra patriots that have bumper stickers with flags on them and lapel pins.
Oh, you mean like Mitt Romney and his five sons who never stood post to help this country, to defend this country?
Well, again, why do these people
continue
to attack America and destroy the economy and do everything possible to put stumbling blocks in the way to recovery?
Well, you know, and now you brought up, I just want to go down this list here.
Yeah, but listen to this for one second.
Yeah.
We were talking about the economy just a minute ago. Here are your stats. You know, 4 million jobs lost under Bush at the collapse. Obama, 2010, added 1.03. 2011, 1.84 million. 2012, 1.86. So this is a guy who inherited the Second Great Depression, has an obstreperous government. He didn't have a rubber stamp government like George Bush did when he was in there, like giving money away to millionaires and by the shovelful, passing any bill they want. Hey, you want to waterboard somebody? Let's do it. You know, no investigation necessary. But no, amidst everything from the depths of the Second Depression, here's a guy adding 2 million jobs, and they're complaining. They're lambasting.
But they keep saying
they're attacking him.
The president had everything he wanted when he first came into office. He came in with his last night. He controlled the Congress and he controlled the Senate. He didn't have 60 votes.
He didn't have it at all. And that's why they're talking about changing the filibuster law right now. Because
they had 59 votes.
They sat there and obstructed everything they've tried to do since he's
been in office.
That's why they're having the debate right now with Reid.
Well, but they only changed
it. And Reid doesn't want to alter the traditions of the Senate.
Well, but you don't have to. All you have to do, the traditions of the Senate was that you had to filibuster. They changed that when you did. Now they phone it in. Oh, no, I don't like that. One person calls it, it's not done.
Right.
No,
right.
They need to tell the American people on C-SPAN and on television where we can see them, I don't want to do it because I don't like him.
Yeah.
Because they won't have an excuse.
Exactly right. And they need to be beholden to, they need to be in the well of the Senate.
That's right.
Speaking to the American people. You got an objection? Stand up and say it.
Stand up
and
be counted. Tell us why.
Secret holds on this and phoned in on that. Bull.
But that is
exactly why, though, it's gotten to the point of dysfunction where now you talk about having to have supermajorities to even pass anything.
Right. Absolutely. And that's the reason why they wanted to control, breathed a sigh of release when they were able to control all these congressional seats, because they're in seats that will always be there.
That's the only reason they're there now.
That's right.
The only thing
they
even
be there
saved
now.
On this Congress in this last election, the only seats they even won were the ones that they completely
Right. They lost every other seat. They yeah. did not win one single seat
that they didn't
that they tried to win.
Yeah.
And that they didn't have to.
Well, and this is why. Now, this gets back to something that you and I have said 100 times. This is one of my biggest pet peeves, and it goes to the heart of the individual small-town voters.
Right.
Apathy. Apathy is the killer. Not the Republicans, not the corporations that pay for the ads. Apathy.
Well, but you see, the problem is, do the people, yes, you're absolutely correct when you say apathy. The problem is, do people really understand what apathy means?
No, people don't understand what any of it means. That's why they don't pay attention, and that's what makes me mad. Because the Republicans do.
Oh, yeah.
They're at least the game masters. Well, not the little fools.
Not some of these clowns
out,
that are in and out.
Spinning
like
around with their finger up their nose.
Video,
going,
no.
I can see Russia from
yeah,
the
right.
front
I mean, yeah.
But the real masters know what's going on, and that's why they would spend billions, literally, to get their people into office during off-season elections, during non-presidential elections, because they know when. You know, you remember there was even a big push, not just the redistricting here. They were talking about, we've got to control the census. We've got to control this and that. Yeah. They know when it's vital to get in office. And people don't ever pay attention to the little things.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same on the local level. You know, you may have Barack Obama sitting on high in the great office, way far away on Mount Olympus. And then you don't show up to vote for your city council or your school board or the county commission. And then guess what? Oopsie whoopsie. Next thing you know, you've lost everything in your community. And that's why I can't understand that people don't pay attention, because right now we would control the entire Congress up, down, sideways, and get anything we wanted done. This economy would be booming. There would be no held up confirmations. There would be no problems. We would change the judiciary. We would change the laws of this land. We would have protections. We would have Lilly Ledbetter acts every other week. But instead, they let them go in and buy seats because they weren't paying attention in 2010.
Well, but you see, even the people that know better
mm-hmm.
are saying, there's a problem with this. And let me play you something right here. Even the pundits who know better are saying things like this.
We cannot be cowed by them. We have to, when they say things that are culturally insensitive and stupid, we need to go after them and say, this is not right. We got to stand up. We need some real leadership within the party to say, you know, you are alienating voters that we want to attract. Knock it off.
We've got to get a kind of a party view of America that's not right out of Rush Limbaugh's Dream Journal.
Who is and who is not conservative should not be defined around who agrees with whatever outrageousness comes out of the mouth of these talk radio hosts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Enough is enough.
Right.
Your conservative followership has been fleeced, exploited, and lied to by the conservative entertainment complex.
Nick?
Now, hey. Could have said it better myself.
I mean, hey, it's only getting worse.
Hey, but you know what?
It's only getting worse.
That's what their friends and partners say. You know, hey, truth hurts.
The thing we had there was something that who was it? Morning Joe said on his radio show
that Scarborough.
Yes, Scarborough, and he's put it right to it. We're gonna play a soundbite in a little bit. But the problem is that these people that they have in office now have went in there by saying, "I'm doing what my people say." And that is a complete and utter lie.
Right.
They're doing it because Barack Obama is black. No other reason. This would not even be on the horizon. None of this stuff would ever come out. We had all these people, all these people who suffered during the Katrina. In the hurricane, Katrina, all the people who suffered down there in New Orleans, all the people in this country who were getting their knuckles wrapped because the Republicans were in charge and didn't care.
Yeah.
So all they cared about was getting more cuts for the supposedly job makers.
Yeah.
And not one job was created. Well, how many jobs were created during the Bush for 8 years? A million?
No, they ended up losing.
No,
so
lost.
They,
what I'm saying?
Because
he lost 850,000 a month.
I mean,
right.
1 year alone, he lost 4.5 million.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Did not create a job. Now, Who was that to blame on? Yeah. Was that to blame on Obama? He wasn't in office.
No. Hey, look, you remember this is a president who wouldn't even come back from vacation or whatever for a week.
The
press went so bad.
Right.
That they were people drowning on TV.
And then
for
he
help.
Flew over.
And then, yeah, he's a heck of a job, Brownie. You know, I mean, they don't care. No, they don't care.
And there was
is the same group
hundreds
that have been
of
sitting in Congress.
Hundreds of, or thousands, I should say, thousands of trailers that sat out in the parking lot being waterlogged.
Oh, they let them all ruin.
And they all just...
And taxpayer dollars. We had to buy them off and throw them away. They all rotted, right?
I mean,
hundreds of thousands.
This is completely outrageous.
Oh, they bought them, but didn't deliver them. They didn't care.
Because they had no means to deliver them.
Yeah.
Because that was not part of the whole setup.
Yeah,
because they made, FEMA was no longer a part of the cabinet. They took it out of the cabinet.
Just like they took out terrorism that Clinton had in there. You
That's right,
that?
He took the terrorism,
out, and then afterwards, we couldn't have ever conceived that a terror attack would occur. You know? You had freaking Clark sitting there next to President Clinton the whole time, teaching him, hey, they're fixing to do something in the Philippines. Stop it. Hey, they're fixing to do something over here. Stop it. You know, and that's why he had all this success. You remember, we stopped one of the biggest airline attacks, three attacks in the Pacific under Clinton. Because he had a terrorism chair sitting there at the table. But that's okay. You know, fiction
is
better than
it is
reality.
It is so unbelievable.
Well, these are the same fools, though, in office. They've been sitting there for 2 months until it became such an embarrassment this past week with Boehner literally lying to Christie and everybody. It wasn't until the Republicans went on air and started complaining
about
it. But these are the same guys. They've been sitting around saying they
would
not.
Because Democrats were complaining. They ain't paying attention to them.
They've already had the bill in the Senate and everywhere else waiting all this time, 2 months since Hurricane Sandy. And they said they wouldn't pass anything until they agreed to end Medicare cuts and all this other stuff, you know, whatever they wanted. You know, let's start cutting off the money for poor people because they're freeloaders. And they held it up for 2 months until the press got so bad, they rammed it through today. And then they went, we'll give you some money.
But they still had 67 didn't vote for it.
Yeah.
Still had 67 that didn't vote for it. And that clown out there in California, who's the head of the chairman of, Ways and Means, the other guy, ISA.
Oh, ISA.
Claiming, they have a lot of pork in that.
Yeah, he was too busy investigating.
What pork? You mean someone wants a roof over their head and that's pork?
Well, they mean it's all the deli meat that's floating off the shore of New Jersey because they won't give them
any. Give me a break. It is
Please.
Just unbelievable. And
it's because they don't care about people at all. Now, if there was the entire shore was owned by,
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump or something. There was a real estate company and he had a deal on it with Dick Cheney was a holder in that, stockholder in that. That money would have been there within about 35 minutes, right?
But it would have been signed by an oil pen.
Later, that these things are still sitting there, waterlogged, destroyed. The entire shoreline of New Jersey's gone. A tidal wave came in. I mean, they flooded.
Well, half of it's gone now.
Subway.
The only part that isn't gone is Atlantic City.
Yeah.
And they lost some, too. Well,
by the way, there's another irony for you. Anybody remember that the only part of New Orleans that survived was the French Quarter, despite Franklin Graham's proclamation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
isn't it funny that all the casinos are still there? But anyway.
Yeah, I wonder why that happened.
But, hey, you know what? They got they're upset with Obama, you know, because he said
they're always upset.
Yeah,
well,
that's true. Well,
there's a statement.
Understatement. No, what they did was they said that, he'll sign this thing, it passes, and they have to fly it out to Hawaii where he is, and they have to find him, and he has to sign it. Then auto pen.
Yeah. It's like,
they forget. Another thing, that's illegal. He can't do that. George Bush is the one that set up auto pen because he wasn't in the freaking White House 60% of the time.
Yeah. That's the guy. Remember, it took 3 months off a year.
I mean, it's so ludicrous. These people, they can't lie enough to get out of their own way.
Yep.
Of the lies that are coming back in their face, but the people who listen to them are so so much of a low information crowd that it don't matter to them.
No.
Because their people don't understand what's going on. But when Rush Limbaugh says that he kicked our butts, Obama kicked our butts, what do these people say now about him?
Mm-hmm.
But see, they listen to Sean Hannity now. Bill O'Reilly yesterday.
What about
Bill? He says, he said something about that if my taxes were raised, he said, I think I'll have to leave the country.
Yeah. Right. There's a door. Didn't Boehner say that?
Boehner said that, right. The thing is that he told it to his fruitcake crowd.
Yeah.
And their memories are, in between the snap of things, a tenth of a second long. So they're not even going to believe it. They're not even going to remember that he said it. So it's a good thing we have TV and YouTube where we can play it over and over and over again.
Yeah, like a loofah in the shower.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way,
people with.
Where is Eddie?
Hey, you know what? In an irony of
irony. Munster Ryan.
Last night, my son Alex, he's been on this kick now that he's old enough. He wants to see and learn all these old shows and this old humor that I grew up with. So, we watched a little bit of Dick Van Dyke and Carol Burnett and things like that. Remember? He was asking about the monsters. Wait. And Netflix has
the
monsters
Congress.
In there. So we were watching last night a marathon of monster shows.
Oh, is that right?
And he was laughing about Eddie Munster.
Oh, you should have a picture. Show, look, side by side, Eddie Munster and Paul Ryan. Now,
and then of course,
Paul Ryan, I think it was that Colin Powell got one vote for Speaker.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
Alan West got two votes for Speaker.
Alan! Our old friend Alan.
And somebody else got 13 votes for Speaker. Can't remember who that mutt was, but somebody else got 13 votes for Speaker. The thing is,
they could have put a floor lamp up there and gotten 13 votes. I mean, come on. Lord God.
A man that's not even in the daggone house anymore,
mm-hmm.
Alan West, and gets two votes. A man who's never been in the Congress before, Colin Powell, he gets one vote. Paul Ryan, I think, got 13 votes.
These people have divorced themselves from reality. They're voting.
They don't care.
Mm-mm.
I imagine,
you know who would have won? They should have put Gipper.
The Gipper, right.
They could have. I bet he would have won by a landslide if you put his name on the ballot. Because that's the way these people think.
The Gipper, yeah.
They'll vote for any myth over reality.
Any myth. And
the myth
that Reagan vote for him anyway?
Lowered taxes every year.
Well,
like that.
But you see, some of these people would say, the Gipper's coming back? We can vote for him? They don't even know he's dead. As much as these Republicans talk about him, how many of these people, I bet you could ask them, how many of them actually believe that he's dead? Or that he's 100, he'd be 110 if he was alive.
Guess what? If people like W would quit blocking cellular research and technology, we might get him back, actually.
Are you telling me that
they might
in the southern states they have sort of interbreeding? Are you actually saying that?
All it takes is one hair follicle, Michael.
What? One hair follicle? One hair follicle.
Hey, you know what?
You
don't put a century worth of Gipper into the minds of the Republicans because they just might do it.
Now, that reminds me of that X-File I saw one time. You remember the X-File?
Which one?
Well,
I love it.
The women were disappearing, and come to find out that
They somehow, I can't remember now, they traced one of the favorite ones. They tracked down where these people were disappearing, and they said, well, it seemed like that when they caught this family of weirdos, and they were all had eyes on top of their heads.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he said, well,
the family from Pennsylvania or something?
Who's, and people don't know, Pennsylvania might as well be in the South anyway. Some parts of Pennsylvania is absolutely wacko. Anyway, so they did what they found the mother under the bed, no arms, no legs.
Mama.
She was just a breeder.
Mama.
Just a breeder. No, don't take me. Don't take me. Where's my son?
They had her on the plywood with the little wheels.
Under the bed.
She had no arms or legs. Oh, my God. That was so horrible. Oh, my God.
I mean, there's that Pat Toomey. That's that moo-moo. I mean, so.
Oh.
But some of these people, like Gomer Pyle down there in Texas, I mean,
Mama.
They have to be interbred. How is your brain function correctly saying and doing the things they do and not realize that it's so absurd that people are actually laughing?
Only sane people are laughing, you know? I mean,
world?
I don't know. I mean, the Joker laughed all the time. I'm not sure about that analogy, actually. But look, these people don't even... They're divorced from reality. They don't know the difference anymore. That's why they can just say anything. You know, that Obama was a Islamic spy plant that his parents did. You remember that one they came up with? You know, that somehow his dad planned to get him in the White House.
Oh, yes. Right.
The one that I loved. So Al-Qaeda could infiltrate our government,
yes.
And it wasn't even around when the man was born.
But it's always been around, Al-Qaeda. It's always been around.
Yeah.
It's been
so, but these people, look, this is saying, look, these are the guys, speaking of Alan West and all this ilk, you know, these are the guys who said that as soon as Obama went back in office, all of the Democrats and the Congress were communists, right?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that
78-81% of the Democratic or liberals are communists.
I think we should have some investigations with the drunkards.
Well, you see, the problem is that he should have been court-martialed, either drummed out or thrown in the brig for the things that he did during the Afghan War.
Mm.
See? So he was forced to retire. Because he still should have been in. But he was forced to retire. And everybody listening needs a call. Just look up Alan West. Look up his history. Some of the things he did. Little fidget. The only reason why he did it, because he has a daggone, he had a gun. He has a big mouth. And that is it. But
they'll just talk smack all day long.
Yeah,
that's what they do.
Talk smack all day long.
I just can't understand that.
What I want to do is... how about Mr. Obama?
In this new year.
In his
new
year.
Beginning.
And his... in his.
Look, we've just won.
Do you think that his...
landslide victory.
What?
We have landslid into home plate.
Yep.
He just did the best community organizing of his life. Overcame immense odds. Just blew away the other party in the election. Not only that, but he also, you know, everybody was like, oh... look at him. He lost Congress after he got in. Well, he just regained Congress pretty handily. He won every single seat except for...
didn't lose a Senate seat, didn't lose a House seat, gained in all aspects.
Yep, gained across the board, retook. I mean, he's got a majority in the Senate now. I mean, we're doing really well.
Well, he's had the majority. He gained two more seats.
Gained more.
Yeah.
But we've got a guy at the top of his game, and then on top of that, he just... got a Republican Congress.
Look at this. Here's what Ryan said. The legislative vote to increase the National Food Insurance Program, ceiling without making it necessary reforms. President Obama and Congress owe the people of New York. Yeah. He's saying that now.
Oh, so Representative Ryan is on TV saying that Obama owes the American people for Hurricane Sandy relief.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even want to listen. This guy's been sitting in there.
Borrowing authority. By $7.9 billion, it would be irresponsible to raise an insolvent program's debt.
So this is a guy who's been blocking legislation for 2 months, and now he's complaining that since we passed something to help the victims, that it's all Obama's fault.
Right. And, okay, and the thing is that this never came up when they passed the when we went to war with Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
When we went to war in Iraq, when we went and passed a drug prescription drug plan, when we gave tax cuts to the upper 2%, we gave tax breaks to everybody across the board, but the upper 2% didn't need it. You can't take from somebody and expect the person to work for free, which is what they did.
But look, you said it earlier. You mentioned the man, Cheney, during that time, when he was called out on it, that they weren't paying for anything, that they were just going to war. And you remember they kept doing those, midnight authorization bills and, don't look behind the curtain.
Right.
There's nothing happening here. Over and over and over, the shenanigans. They wouldn't include the war in any of the budgets. You remember?
Never. They never included the war.
Years, nothing under Bush. During all that time, Cheney's out there. Anytime he's questioned, deficits don't matter.
Exactly.
That's his quote. That's all frivolous. It doesn't matter. It's all ridiculous. Everybody runs the deficit. As soon as Obama gets in, oh my God, look at the deficit.
Oh, Ryan voted against the plan.
Well, good. He can keep that.
So he was one of the Republicans that voted against giving any money to Katrina.
No, to
I mean, Vick. To Sandy.
So not only is he a vice presidential loser, but he's an outright loser, too, who votes against hurricane victims.
Let's see. What does this say here again? Let me read this thing one more time. This legislation proposes to increase the
National Flood Insurance Program
borrowing authority by $9.7 billion. It would be irresponsible to raise an insolvent program's debt. Ceiling without making the necessary reforms. President Obama and Congress owe the people of New York and New Jersey better. So therefore, need to cut something before we can do that.
Yeah, and listen at the logic here. This is what I love about Republicans.
Whoa.
Listen, he's saying a program, and we didn't say a corporation, we didn't say anything, a program run by the government whose sole purpose is to help victims in disasters isn't profitable because it's an aid program, you moron. But he's saying because it's not a profitable enterprise that we shouldn't fund it. What planet
Mars are
you from?
They say the same thing about schools. They say the same thing
about anything.
Well, it's not like the military where we sell weapons.
Oh my God. I'm
But they say that about healthcare. They say that about schools. They say that about anything that they can't control themselves.
Yeah, but all of our roads cost money.
That's why they don't want to have infrastructure. That's why they don't want to have infrastructure.
That's what we do as a government.
Well, isn't that part of the jobs, the good and welfare?
Yeah.
Isn't that in the Constitution somewhere? Or is that in the Bill of Rights? Maybe it's in the Communist Manifesto.
Yeah. Right next to, Karl Marx signatures.
That's where it's at. I know I saw it somewhere. Because, I read the Communist Manifesto every day.
But this guy, Paul Ryan, has the gall to go in and say that a program by the government that gives money to victims isn't profitable enough for him, so he isn't going to support it. And he doesn't think that any more money should be spent on it.
Katrina. Why did they support the flooding in Texas when the hurricane went down there and wiped out half of Galveston?
Yeah.
Why did they support the tornado damage in Kansas?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, Mike. Every time there's a natural disaster, we go to the aid of people.
No Democrat caused it.
Yeah.
It's a Republican governor.
Their favorite person, God, caused it. So why all of the – I don't understand them. It's just – it's mind-blowing.
They have –
why?
How many votes here? Yay, Republican, was it 158?
159.
159, 150, 185 Democrats.
15 again.
59
no, 15, no votes. 15 of them wouldn't vote so that they're not on record. What losers.
That's a no.
Yeah, that's a no.
But they're too craven to even at least, you know, give Paul Ryan his due. He at least voted no and said I voted no. These other people, no vote.
Yeah, because they can say, I didn't vote for that.
I'm not on record for voting
that's
no.
That's right.
Even though I hate them and I can't stand giving money to poor people. Yeah. Okay. Enough with Eddie Munster. Let's get back to Obama's
reform.
Now,
I'm done with Eddie Munster. Let's get back to a real superhero, Obama Man. The man who creates jobs. The man who saved the economy.
What did he came out with a list of resolutions. Stating that he wanted to, one, protect our planet from the effects of climate change. That must have sure wrinkled some of those moo-moos on the science committee who don't even know how to spell science.
Yeah.
You know, they had to actually...
That's one of their bad words that you can't say.
They had no. But first of all, since they don't know anything about science, they never took science, they had to ask someone... Where is the science committee office? Because they didn't know how to read science on the door. So they said, that's it. That says science. Oh, okay. So
they're like, is that change you can believe in?
But
what is climate change?
This climate change, this whole melting of the glaciers, this whole weather.
You mean
coming up the coast like this and flooding out half? Well, I guess that would be almost one third of the United States, right?
We just had a
1,000 miles.
This entire conversation we've been talking about Hurricane Sandy, a superstorm that struck New York City, which is a direct result predicted for the last 20 years of global warming. Because what happens when you warm the Atlantic? You get hurricanes, just like you have down in the Caribbean.
Absolutely.
So, I mean... Oh.
I mean, because the Atlantic never got warm enough to do it. Now it is.
And again, this is one of those things. Let's be intelligent people. Intelligent people can head off crises before they occur because they can, you know, predict the future by studying trends and science. They've been talking about global warming since the 1960s. Okay? Since the 1980s, we've been seriously trying to legislate something to save it because they're like, time's running out. Well, time just ran straight out into the subways of New York City. Okay? And
108 years.
These people,
that has never happened.
Yeah. These people don't, there's no forethought. To Ryan and all the rest of you, if you're upset about the cost of repairing New Jersey and New York City, it's far cheaper 20 years ago, instead of obstructing and blocking any kind of climate change legislation and like putting a filter on a smokestack of a factory or anything like that. That's a lot cheaper than waiting for the next superstorm to wipe out Manhattan.
But there won't be enough. That was a freak of nature. That would never happen
again.
That's
what burns me up, though. We have Katrinas and Sandys and all of that because of the lack of forethought. If we would have simply... Carter tried to enact more fuel-efficient cars, you know, which didn't go too far. Carter was also the first one. Nobody ever remembers this. He went all solar, led the way by turning the White House all solar, put solar panels on it, and then Reagan's first day in office, he ripped them off. Right? So we had this solved in 1970, people. But yet here we are saying, well, it costs a lot. I'm going to block this legislation because this isn't very profitable to pay for the damages.
And it looks ugly on the roof.
That we could have predicted. I mean, we did predict and we could have stopped it. You know.
Well, now,
just, anyway,
what,
it
was
just
the, what was the movie where the New York got frozen over?
Day After Tomorrow.
Day After Tomorrow.
That's
now, how did that happen?
The extrapolation of science. Just like, you know, a long time ago, people used to say Jules Verne and H.G. Wells wrote science fiction.
Right. Yeah. Science fiction came through.
And then, you know, right now we've got submarines, we got tanks, we got flying craft, you know, we've got
atomic bombs. Now, hey, I worked for the Weather Service 25 years.
Yeah.
Now, if we could have a flooding in New York City as dramatic as it is right now, we can have ice covering over New York City the same way.
Hey, all it takes.
One, 2 degrees either way. Even 2 degrees.
Hey, look, one of the things that's happening right now, they've already had it. It broke down once and to restart it the next year. But it would be absolutely catastrophic. People don't understand, you know, heat difference in America, or anywhere, not just in America, heat difference on the globe makes weather.
That's right.
Hot and cold creates wind, current, you know.
That's right.
It creates systemic change. And that's what makes seasons, that's what makes, you know, everything. If we break that system, like we're doing now, by warming the oceans, things will change.
That's not a bathtub.
One of the things that can change is right now we have a current that comes from the Caribbean, and because it's hot, it pushes up, goes shooting forward, and it goes and is pulled by it being much colder up toward the Arctic.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes flowing zippity-zip all up our coast, making us warm.
Right,
and then it goes zinging right across, and it warms all of England. And as my grandfather used to famously said, hey, if we ever got in a war with England, all we need to do is dam that thing right there, and they can freeze over, and they'll be just like Greenland.
That's
right? Because they're on the same latitude, right up there, right?
That's
now,
right.
It's funny, except it's true. All we have to do is if we warm the ocean enough, the cold water is not going to pull the warm water up. That system's going to break down. There won't be a Gulf Stream. And as soon as it does, that's what they were talking about in the day after tomorrow. We will freeze across the northern part of the
absolutely,
continent.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Canada has ice because it's cold.
It's cold, right.
And we have a warm sea over here rubbing against
they don't
New
have
Jersey,
the Caribbean up there.
That's the only reason
right.
that New Jersey and New York are, you know, that's why New Jersey's a garden state.
That's
and
right.
not the other side of Iceland.
That's right.
Know.
That's absolutely correct.
I mean, people just don't understand. It's not mystical. It's not
but
magical.
They don't know
it's
where
not,
they live at. They don't know geography.
It's a liberal
myth. You learn, this ain't something that you had to learn to go to college for. This is something you learned in freaking elementary first year geography in school, in high school.
Yeah.
You learned about the currents. You learned about the oceans, how many oceans we have. You learned about how many continents we have. You know how the oceans flow. Take a look at a freaking map.
Is that what you take the medicine for?
It's a continent. Right.
Yeah, it is. It's embarrassing. And
it's outrageous.
But you know what? Ignorance has real life effect. Ignorance is funny to laugh at, but the real consequence of laughing is that we end up in the situation where we've got changing climate, we've got a warming world, we've got hurricane super storms like Sandy that are destroying cities like New York City, which I remind people is just a wee bit important to the world economy and culture. But that is why you have people complaining and crying on TV about the cost of a spending bill to pay for the damages. When if we had sensible policy to begin with, we wouldn't have any damage to pay for. Hey, how about that? Let's get back to those New Year's resolutions. It's 2013.
Well,
who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men. The shadow knows.
Hey, who knows what lurks in the hearts of mechanical hearts of men, I mean.
Now, the thing is, we have...
Who's that?
We have a this thing won't shut up. How come? Anyway, we have
the
a
shadow knows.
We have a that's right. Only the shadow knows. We have a
well, where am I at?
A caller. Do we not?
We have immigration reform. The president wants to. Now, how come I've got that in the background here? You hear that?
Because it's still playing.
Yeah, I know, but it shouldn't be.
You're having the shadow program playing.
Oh, we're having welcome. The shadow. That should not be playing.
Welcome to this special edition
of the
shadow.
The shadow knows he should not be playing. Why is the shadow playing?
We're talking about immigration. What?
We're talking about immigration, and I can't find it on here. Why can't I find it? Oh, there it is.
So are we talking about Obama's resolutions again?
No. Yes. We're going back to
his resolutions for 2013. Things that
immigration reform, what do you think that is going to be? How do you think that is going to be handled? We got a major problem here, immigration reform.
Mm-hmm.
I think, no, it's not we. I think the regressive party does.
Well, didn't they just pass something yesterday or sometime that they said something with the visa? Now that visas you can get in easier with a
Visa card? With a Visa card?
Yeah.
How about a MasterCard?
That'd make us profitable again.
can we do it with a MasterCard?
Pay to
get
in. Pay to play. Welcome to America.
Welcome to America.
If you already have a relative here,
yes,
your visa time is cut in half or something like that.
Well,
so that, you know, that'll help. Because we already know your family, so come on in.
Yeah.
But no foreigners, no people we don't really know.
No foreigners, huh?
But so we've got, okay, immigration reform is on his list.
What music?
Yes, it's time for Grace. How are you, Grace?
Yeah, I hear you all talking about immigration reform, you know, and I like, listen, I like the whole Visa and MasterCard thing, but I think what's the best is American Express Platinum.
Yeah.
Okay, if you got American Express Platinum, we won't just open the door. We'll knock it down for you.
we'll let you slam it right behind you. Yeah.
Right. Only at about 35% interest. That's it.
John Boehner will look. Old Boehner and Senator McKinley will open the doors for you because they'll say you got money.
Hey, if you got enough money, they'll drive you to your new home personally.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, well, what about?
Now, listen.
Yeah,
just one second. Did you hear about that lawyer in L.A. the other day who gave his home to a homeless family?
No.
Kindness of heart for Christmas. He found a homeless family on the street and gave them his home. Moved that. Turned the keys over to him. Gave him the home, just out of pure kindness, because he said he was just, you know, tired of the way our society treats people. But he had enough money. It didn't affect him any. He gave him a home for free.
So no termites or anything?
No, that's just awesome. You know what I mean? No, that's just humanitarian. I mean, we're talking about human beings here. And people come to this country to better themselves.
And he's a conservative Republican.
I don't know what he is.
Okay.
He's a lawyer.
A lawyer.
You know, but
he's a lawyer.
And have hearts.
Well, maybe there is a spot reserved for him in heaven then. I don't know.
Exactly. See, hey, just out of a favor, we'll kill him last. Shakespeare said. But no, seriously, my point is people come to this country because of opportunity. They come here to better their lives. They don't come here to, you know, rob and rape and pillage and kill us and box cutter us to death. They come here for a chance. And
that's
we
right.
need to make it easy, and we need to make it fair and open the door.
Well, I just want to know, Grace, there's two things I need for you to tell us about. The first thing is, what about the Democratic Party in North Carolina?
Okay, well, here we go. We've got two candidates, two people.
Should I take a drink first?
You should take a drink first. If you don't have a drink ready, pour one, buddy.
Oh, Lord.
All right, so David Parker has said he won't run. He will not run. Now, you know, I
believe John Boehner first.
There's a credibility gap right there.
You think?
Because the last time he said that he would not, that he would step down, et cetera, you know, this whole undercurrent shenanigans was going on, and so he stayed on. that's number one.
I've seen this movie before.
I've seen this movie before many times, and and here's the thing: I'm sure he's a good person. I'm sure that David Parker is a good individual, you know, good person, but he's not been good for the Democratic Party. And that is, I cannot, I cannot begin to say that enough times. We lost in North Carolina, and I'm not going to put the blame solely at David Parker's feet, but I sure am going to put a whole lot of it.
I am.
His job as chair was to bring us together and
right.
and help and you know, help look for good candidates to run. We should have fielded a candidate in every single race, every single House race, every single Senate race, you know, in North Carolina, Senate North Carolina, and all the local races too. Instead, what happens is this divisiveness was perpetrated and carried on, not only at the state level, but on the individual little county level. Look what they did to Aisha Dukes. And look what they did to me.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of us being able to focus our attention on actually working with OFA, working with the local candidates, working with the grassroots to get our people elected, we had to end up fighting the party. We were fighting within ourselves.
Right.
That's wrong. That's wrong, 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 wrong.
And that's exactly why North Carolina turned out to be a disappointment in a landslide
victory. And is David Parker, and I hope that he had nothing to do with all of this shenanigans, and I hope that June Mabry was flying off the handle all by herself. But once he knew what was going on, he should have pulled the reins.
Absolutely.
He should have put the kibosh on it. He should have said, stop this right now. Stop it. But he didn't. And I don't know why he didn't. So if it comes down to that, the blame does fall in his lap quite squarely. A lot of it does. Yeah, because I can tell you that anecdotally, I can tell you that I spent over 90% of my time fighting this nonsense petition to remove, which had absolutely no merit at all. None.
Well, I understand they overheard. I understand. I understand they overheard David Parker, and we have a little clip of what he was being questioned at the time about this. And this is what was said.
I know exactly what he'll tell you, lies. He was no different from any other officer in the wardroom. They were all disloyal. I tried to run the ship properly with the book, but they fought me at every turn.
Maybe that was true. I mean, I don't know, but I understand this was a secret tape that was just sent me.
All right.
Yeah. So
it's just like the Boehner debacle. This is a complete and utter failure of leadership, and you cannot. I'm sorry. It varied county to county and town to town, and this person that and that party. Didn't work as well as this one or whatever. It all was under his command, his leadership, and he should have, like you said, united rather than divided. And this was a gimme win, and he lost the whole state, basically.
Honest to goodness, you know, if people are constantly saying, well, you can't blame the lead, you can't blame so-and-so, he was just the chair. No, yes, I can blame him.
Please. Listen, they were, before the daggone convention was here, they were saying, you know what, we never should have had this thing here. Now, why? It wasn't because of me. It wasn't because of you. Who was it because? Give us a break here.
Yeah.
I mean, did these people were running around here, had no idea what they were doing?
No, not a clue.
The president lost this by a handful. That should have been changed if Parker was straight up and did his job properly.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
To begin with, he could have won it anyway. But beyond that, this was key battleground state that was repeatedly stated as this by the president. And by the vice president, and by every other Democrat within throwing distance, and they told the guy up, down, and sideways, and he still failed.
Well, you know, but see, here's the secret problem behind that. Obama knew that was a lie. That's why he didn't depend upon North Carolina. He was telling us that, but He's a community organizer. He was organizing another community.
I know, but look, this guy was handed, you know, basically the golden goose of all golden gooses. He had battleground state status. He had the first time ever. We had the whole convention right here in Charlotte, and the guy still couldn't deliver? I mean,
I know. It's a failure.
Well,
Colorado is the reddest of red states, and they delivered.
Look, we had the reddest of red states, and last time we put in the first female Democrat governor ever, you know, so.
And,
hey,
black president.
And a black president.
What's your excuse now? So, you know, the Republicans or the Progressive Party is going to do what they do. You know, a dog does what he does. But, you know, if you have a leash on the dog, he don't do what he does.
Yeah, but every once in a while, old Yellow just
get this.
Put down.
But look, get this. There's even more fun and games so that you can understand. Okay, there were five people that signed that petition to remove. We're going to go back to that petition to remove. Five people who signed it. Two of them withdrew their names. Okay, so there are actually six people. Two of them withdrew their names. Now, of the four that remain, three of them have come together. And they have put their names forward as one of them, David Ford, is asking to be the chair of Cabarrus County next go-round. Ruthie Roberts, who also signed her name to this petition to remove, wants to be first vice. Janet Haywood, who also signed the petition to remove, wants to stay on the board. So let me ask you something. What kind of message are we sending people? That you do what we want you to do, or we're going to ask you to be removed, and we're going to take over the party. And that's what they want to do.
Yeah, I think
the
dictionary has a word for that. It's called a coup.
It's called a coup. And it is just when I heard about it, which I heard about it yesterday, I about fell over.
Well,
Grace, sadly, you had to get up off the floor and fall over again because of this entire year.
Yeah.
Well, listen, now, how come I don't know any of those people? I don't know none of them.
That's a good question. You don't know any of those people because they're not active. They don't.
I have never heard that name.
Hey, Michael, the reason for that is because you're not part of the cabal.
You
gotta be one to know one.
Well, Grace, we have to leave this sleeping dog lying a little bit longer in the sun. But I want to know what is going to be the deal with this. It was the bill that was passed that Obama. Put a sign statement on, and people who do not know what a sign statement is. And
a sign statement. Oh, hold on! I just got home. I made a lot of noise. Let me get in. A signing statement. I just walked in. I got to say hi to the baby. Hello, baby.
What's up, baby? A signing statement is written by the president at the time of legislation.
Can you hold on a quick second? I'm going to actually put my husband on, and he will explain what a signing statement, what a president, what that means. Okay? Yes, you will.
While waiting for Joe to get on, signing statement is often a statement that merely commits that comments on a bill and saying that it is good legislation or it meets some processing and for a press move more, there's a blah, 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 statement. I don't want to read all this stuff in here. Well, what it does is it states that the president can agree or disagree
with like certain
provisions or a portion of the bill that he is not fully on board with, you know. So, but he's going to make sure that whatever is passed and that whatever that bill says, he will faithfully execute under
the Constitution, but that he may or may not hold all the provisions of that bill up to the light of day all the time. So now there's this bill.
It's like they can
which
say,
is,
hey, we're going to interpret it.
Right, we're
going to
interpret our own
so
way.
So they're just kind of
right.
strengthen portions and not strengthen
right.
other portions.
Now that's not like saying, well, I'm getting married tomorrow, but honey,
yeah.
I'm also going to marry two other women.
Well,
no,
in legalese, one of the problems at all with the signing statement is that it gives the president a little wiggle room.
Right.
It gives him a little bit of flexibility to say, I'll agree that it's a law, but I'm not really happy about it. Like the Defense of Marriage
right.
Act or something like that. And the problem is that people say that a president, some people complain that the president shouldn't have the ability to do any kind of interpretation or signing statement. They just either have to accept the law fully or veto it. That's the only options they have.
Well,
that's the controversy.
We have Mr. George Gaffney
on
the phone here, who is a former history teacher in his own right. Before we go on to Mr. Gaffney, Mr. George W. Bush signed 1,200 signing statements.
I'm sorry, how many?
1,200 signing statements.
1,200.
Barack Obama had signed 21. Now,
1,200 to 21.
So, Mr. Gaffney.
Yes.
Yes. So, am I correct in what I read about a signing statement?
I'm telling you now, I'm not able to speak historically about the signing statement, but I can see where it's a reasonable thing, because nobody, an executive can really be wholehearted for everything that he's signing.
Right.
So let's
right.
say they had money to spend on a school or something. That was what the thing was about.
Yeah.
You
and
know,
sometimes these things are laden with extra provisions.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, pork.
Yeah, it's pork, but it's also the emphasis, you know, like you might be building a school, but you don't really want to spend that much money on the gym. You want to spend more money on the computer lab and the science department.
Right.
And you kind of like letting people know that first priority is going to get the computer lab and the science building up. And when the gym comes, it comes. You know, it makes sense to clarify, how you're going to handle things or something.
Right.
I can see it. It's hard to. It's not realistic to think anybody is going to go wholehearted 100% for something they're agreeing to.
Right.
Well, we just lost Grace. I don't know what happened, but
they were having trouble with the dog.
They were saying yes, saying hello to the baby. What happened was that so this signing statement had to it was involved with the president on Wednesday. It was the Defense Authorization Act. And in the, so it's a couple of provisions in it. One said that restricted the use of transferring prisoners from Guantanamo Bay and Afghanistan. And because, remember, the president came into office saying that he was going to close Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
And he wasn't going to have any more of these renditions and these other prisons around the world.
Because the whole point, if people forget somehow, is that they wanted an extra legal prison
right.
that they had off our shores so that they could hold people but not be holding to
subject.
The judicial process.
Right, to the judicial process.
So, but he was trying to end all that. But anyway,
right. So what he said was that he did not go, he went along with what they did. And they fought him every step of the way, so he could have used a signing statement back then.
Right.
But and they were saying, the reason why it wasn't the reason we were just trying to fight the president, it was because that he never told us where he could safely put these 150 or less than that now prisoners without them going out and creating havoc. In the United States of America.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have any really known criminals lockup now.
And we don't have any maximum security facilities.
We don't have any maximum facilities
Look.
Where people
Who do you know that raised more havoc than the Sharon Tate killer or the clown man?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, give us a break here.
Yeah, I mean Hannibal Lecter. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We got boxes. We can put these people in.
Of course.
Big, nice, clear.
Plenty of them. By themselves.
Yeah.
Nobody else in the prison but them.
Just don't give them a pen.
That's right. Just don't give them a pen. Well, the problem is, though, why?
The reason that this is even a controversy still today is because he hasn't been able to move the prisoners.
Right.
He's been trying since he got in office, and every step of the way, the Republicans have blocked
him. Well, now he's got a signing statement.
Yeah.
Now he can.
Yeah. But they've been trying to block him because, you know, he tried to put him in Leavenworth, and he tried to New York. Said that they would take them, for instance, all this stuff, and they had a hoopla. You know, we can't have terrorists in this on our shores.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, who's the guy that killed Sharon Tate? What's his name? Charles Manson. I mean, Charles Manson. Do you consider him a Boy Scout?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't believe this. But Charles Manson is not a Boy Scout. You don't call that terror what he did?
Yeah.
I mean, what are these guys going to do? They're going to break out, and they're going to run to the local Lowe's and create a nuclear bomb? I mean, whoa, this is completely lunacy. This is completely lunacy.
Well, again, the president's in this position because he has been forced to be in this position. He's been trying to take care of it for 4 years. They refused to act. And so now he's saying, I'll do it myself.
Okay.
I gave you a chance.
So you're right, that they had the chance. And
yeah. He said, I've been waiting.
And he doesn't have to worry about getting reelected.
He doesn't have to worry about being reelected.
That's
but then
true.
He says, okay, I gave you an entire term. You failed to deliver. Now I'll do it myself.
That's right.
And then you're complaining about that. That's why you see our favorite whiner, Mr. McCain.
Right.
The
dynamic duo of McCain and Graham, the career whiners, they have now jumping up and down. And they said, this is my administration, the president said, will interpret and implement these provisions in a manner that does not interfere with my constitutional duty. He says, but of course, the dynamic duo, they added their two cents.
They didn't really say
that. But yeah, they added their two cents by saying, the president seems to blame these provisions for his inability to shut down Guantanamo Bay detention facility. He has it backwards. These and similar provisions in the past defense bills resulted from the administration's announcements of an arbitrary deadline to close Guantanamo Bay facility by January 10th.
January
2010.
Again, we have the Republicans saying, even on the record, our obstructionism and our desire to do everything possible, even write it into law, to restrict him from closing Guantanamo. You know, they didn't give funds for it. They didn't let any, you know, movement of people, all these types of things they've done. Now they put it into law. And they say that we did it solely to stop him from doing this.
Yes.
And then they're mad because he points it out.
He pointed out.
How dare you point it out?
How dare you point out something so dastardly that we didn't intend anybody else to know, since they listen to Fox News and they might hear it or see it someplace in a newspaper by mistake.
Since we got Mr. Gaffney on.
Since we have Mr. Gaffney on, and Mr. Gaffney
important.
Was an award-winning lifelong teacher in the New York City public school system with two Purple Hearts.
Congratulations. Thank
two
you,
Purple
sir.
Hearts, a Silver Star, and a Congressional Medal of Honor in school systems. And then came down here and was shot four times in the classroom. No, that's not true.
No. But this isn't a thing to make light of. Listen.
Yes.
We've had a bad year.
We had a bad
year. With schools and teachers and students and all the horrors that have occurred. So, honest to God, though, thank you for being a teacher. Thank you for serving as a teacher. It is a often thankless profession that gets blamed for everything that goes wrong. You don't get paid. You don't get help. But I appreciate greatly that you did teach our youth. We need all the help we can get.
It was just two youths.
But
that's all.
What are we going to do about the I guess we can move straight into Newtown. And
what I really wanted to play here
is they asked George is what his thoughts were about, I just heard it today, that the on Ohio wanting to have every kid, every teacher in the school to carry a gun. But before he, what he's thinking about that, I want to play this for everybody.
Last Saturday. Good evening, everybody. This is Archie Bunker of 704 Hauser Street, veteran of the big war, speaking on behalf of Guns for Everybody. Now, question. What was the first thing that the communists done when they took over Russia? Answer, gun control. And there's a lot of people in this country who want to do the same thing to us here in a kind of conspiracy, see. You take your big international bankers, they want to, what do you call, masticate the people of this here nation like puppets on a wing. And then when they get that done, turn us over to the communists.
Oh, Archie, I'm now, glad they put you on a stool. You look tall and sitting down.
Now, I want to talk about another thing that's on everybody's mind today, and that's your stick-ups and your skyjackings, which, if that was up to me, I could end the skyjackings tomorrow.
You could?
All you got to do is arm all your passengers. He ain't got no more superiority there. He ain't going to dare to pull out no rod. And then your airlines, then they wouldn't have to chase the passengers on the ground no more. They just pass out the pistols at the beginning of the trip, and they pick them up again at the end. Case closed.
Now, Mr. Gafferty, I just want to know, would you be, if you were still teaching in one of the major schools in our country today, want to just at the morning coffee for the teachers pass out a gun with a cup of coffee?
Well, you know, look, it's just like this. Suppose the guy in Connecticut had shot up a library. Then you'd want to arm the librarians. I mean, you know, you can't win. I mean, a movie theater, the people getting shot. You know, you arm all the ticket takers. I don't know. It's you know, these are things that we are not in any way prepared to deal with. I mean, I don't know what you can do. I mean, it's not a common occurrence. It's a catastrophic occurrence. But
what is Mrs. Witherspoon with a pistol going to do against an AR-15 anyway? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, here's the thing, Bo. Well, we say it's not a common occurrence. It is in this country since this horrible tragedy in Newtown. 409 people have been shot and killed.
That's just this last month.
And that's just last month. So it is out of control.
Yeah.
It is out of control.
The NRA proposed the same thing after Columbine. They went to Columbine,
right,
staged a gun show, and then lobbied to have Colorado pass legislation to arm all the teachers. And it got defeated by bad press. But they tried it then. And here we are again, the same thing. They're calling for the same thing. We had LaPierre and everybody on TV the other day saying, all we need is more guns. That'll solve the gun problem.
Now, we're going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about this. This, I don't know, those who have been in the military, I don't know, in the last, since 1960, the AR-15 was the same gun that I used in Vietnam. It was the M16 I used. They had an M14 before that that was so horrible because it got jammed in all the weather. They changed it, and the M16
was lighter weight. Yeah.
That one was lighter weight than M16. But they did a lot of changing on the weapon. But that is not a in the house weapon.
It was specifically designed.
It's specifically made for war and outside, and it was made to shoot people.
Can I read this?
Because it doesn't have stopping power. It's a .22 bullet, period.
The AR-15 was designed in 1957 by the U.S. Army under their design.
Right.
They asked Armalite to come up with it. And this is the quote. They want a, quote, high-velocity, full- and semi-automatic fire weapon with 20-shot magazines, 6 pounds fully loaded, able to penetrate both sides of the standard Army-issue helmet at 500 meters.
Right, that means through your head.
Through
one side of the helmet, through the head, and out the other side.
Which also blows that whole argument about all they need is body armor.
Yeah, right.
This is made to go through that.
Right.
And well, that's exactly why this student was able to blast his way in through the terror color-coded alert doors that were locked down at that school. He blew those locks out and walked into the school and then killed all these kids because it's a military weapon.
Well, you don't go hunting elephants with a .22 slug. Now, the one thing about it was that the slug was so little and so light that at distance, great distances, the wind could take it off mark.
Right.
But because it traveled at such a high velocity, mm-hmm. that compensated for a lot of the wind distance. But the problem is, it was not meant to shoot anything else but human beings.
And at close range.
And at close range.
And at automatic distance.
I mean, right. And this guy had a 100 now round clip.
100.
100. Not the 20 it was meant to have. 100 round clip. Now,
where in anybody's imagination is this a home defense or a hunting?
Well, hey, listen, I'm inside a house. You give me a daggone Glock or give me a 38, give me anything but an M16.
Well, I'm just saying.
Because if I'm hiding behind a couch.
How do you defend 100 round right. automatic rifle clip? And were you blowing the squirrel's memory away?
Right.
I mean,
absolutely.
It's a smear.
What would you imagine, George, the ramifications of that being brought into the school systems that you have taught in?
I mean, it's you know, you can't have an arms race in the classroom. It's not feasible. You can't, like you said, Mrs. Jones or something can't come in with her own pistol or her own cadre of weapons and things like that. But that's the thing about it. Look, I've never understood this. We talk about a plane being blown up out of the sky and you go through security at the airport. Well, if the terrorists decide to blow up a supermarket, then we'll be, trying to put the metal detectors in walking into the supermarket and bomb detectors. These things are not, they're so hard to get your head around it's just such an insane situation. I mean, if somebody shot up the waiting room in a hospital, then we'd have to search and frisk people to come in for medical attention. Now, well, you actually do go through the metal detector
right.
in the Greenville Hospital. When you come in, there's a metal detector there.
Oh, really?
For the patients at the emergency. Yeah, in the main hospital. The main hospital, you go through the metal scanner, and they do have to empty your pockets and things like that to come into the hospital.
Right?
So that's what they have. They have a metal detector there.
Holy. And that's in Greenville.
The emergency room.
Holy cow!
Greenville, the main hospital. I don't see it at any other hospital. The main one. But I'm just saying. But again, I don't have a problem with that if they got to screen you because there must be a reason they had to do that. But I mean, if they don't also have the doctors walking around with guns on their hips and the nurses ready to, toss hand grenades, It can't be an arms race to see if you can outdo any nut that shows up, and it can't cost effective. I mean, we don't want kids to be killed, but you cannot change a school or a movie theater or something into a military installation. That's just not practical.
And it doesn't look. The NRA came up with this. Their latest greatest gasp was the let's put a armed professional in every school. Well, they already have armed professionals in every school. We already got cops in every school. We've got security guards in every school. CMS has them all over the place. People forget Columbine, for instance. They had them there. And they engaged the boys. They were shooting them all over. And they got outgunned all over the place.
Yeah.
They, you know, So we've already done that. It's a failure. You can't have a situation with guns in school at all. And I told you this the other week anyway. If you start arming people, you're going to have to rebuild every school in America and make every room a safe vault.
Exactly.
Because if you shoot one time through these freaking flimsy trailers they have at classrooms, you're going to shoot like 10 kids in 10 trailers in a row. Because it's going to go through every wall because they're made of particle board and
oh, but won't they be certified?
Well, you know what? I want teachers to teach. They're not soldiers. I want them to teach. I don't want them to be shooting people. I don't want them to be trained and, you know, rappel down from the ceiling and machine gun somebody coming in the front door. I want them to teach our children. And won't we put money into that for a change?
Well, you know, the thing is that people forget – it was last, I don't know, it was sometime in 2012, I can't remember when, in New York City, there were 9 people wounded by professional policemen who were shooting at a subject running down the street.
Right.
And these are policemen who are trained in tactics and handling a weapon and on the firing range. They still wounded 9 other citizens.
And
so
that,
where is the proof,
you know,
here?
The, Mrs. Witherspoon trying to get through grammar is going to not take out a few kids that jumped up screaming in the way of the child that comes busting through the front door.
Now,
you know, or something.
Yes,
come on, you're going to have unparalleled disaster.
Do we have psych evaluations when they hire teachers?
Well, what do you think?
How to handle weapons?
Yeah, but you got one gun go off, and then, you know, Mrs. Smith shoots, and then gym coach Bob hears that gun go off. He comes out in the hall, starts shooting, and then the 14 other teachers start shooting because they heard guns.
And then the kids take out their guns and start shooting.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. It's like if everybody in the theater had the gun, everybody in the entire mall would have been dead, right? I mean, you can't just start shooting randomly and think that it's going to work out.
Well, now, there was another incident that I want you to hear where they try to make that precise thing why guns are necessary.
All right.
I hate that jerk on TV.
Oh, I get it. When you thought he was talking about VD and a permissive society, he was smart. Now you find out he's talking about gun control, he's a jerk.
That's right, and I'm going to prove it to you. How many people in this U.S. of A would like to have guns?
So many, thousands.
But how many people would like to have 3D?
So, there is a big difference. Everybody doesn't want VD, but everybody wants a gun. Is that true? Is that the society we now live in?
Of course.
I mean, it gets worse. And every single moment, it gets worse.
Well,
and the mere fact that we can have someone after a tragedy of 28 people dying. Yes, I'm including the mother and the shooter. 28 people dying as a result of a handgun, and then you who are representing the NRA. Come on and say exactly what Archie Bunker said, give everybody a gun and these things would not change, is the height of hypocrisy.
Yeah. You know what happens when you give everybody a gun? It's called Syria or Kosovo or, you know, that's what civil wars are. You know, it's ridiculous on its face.
A little bit of thing here that I wanted to read you about this article that this gentleman who is from his name is Justin Peters, and he says here that these guns also appeal. To another demographic, the paranoid surveillantist who's worried about having to fend off thieves and trespassers in the event of disaster. And shooting measures that
will help him protect himself against the tyranny of the government. Well, if he thinks that an AR-15 is going to help him against Navy SEAL Team 6 and a YF-22, this man is completely delusional.
Yeah.
And if you look at these shows on TV, these Doomsday Preppers, these people are all completely wacko.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they're dreaming of the day they can live in a dungeon with a can of beans. I mean, that's their dream date. But I thought all of that was over with because, checking my Mayan calendar, it's past. So they can turn in their guns now. It's over. Phew! Catastrophe averted. There is no apocalypse. Or is it all just Mad Max?
It's all, let's see if I can find this here. There's one other thing I wanted you to hear, and this was a soundbite from David Gregory and the president in an interview.
Do you have the stomach for the political fight for new gun control laws?
You know, David, I think anybody who was up in Newtown, who talked to the parents, who talked to the families, understands that, something fundamental in America has to change.
But can you get it done? I mean, the policy.
And so the question is, are we going to be able to have a national conversation and move something through Congress? I'd like to get it done in the first year.
Hoops.
Now, the thing is that, what are you going to say? How is he going to get this through? George, what do you think?
I don't know how he can get anything through, really. I mean, he's going to be try to do more in this second term. But I mean, I don't understand a statement. I don't understand how you can continue in politics when one says that our only goal is to see this president fail, and the other one, Rush Limbaugh, makes that statement he made, which was the same basic thing.
Right.
That, the most unpatriotic thing. I don't want the pilot on the airplane to crash. I want him to be successful. I want to land the plane. We can disagree after we get off, but I don't want the pilot of the plane I'm flying on to fail. I don't understand how you can exist in politics. I don't understand how anybody could say, I hope the president of the United States fails. And we're dedicated to making sure that he doesn't succeed. And then you go on in politics. That's insanity to me. I don't care. If George Bush was the greatest president in the world, I'd be the happiest person in the world. I want whoever's president to be successful and do a good job.
Because then America succeeds.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You can have an audience that will pay attention to you after you say that you've made a statement that no matter what this person comes up with, you're going to be against them just for the sake of being against them. And you can't deny a little racism in there because, I mean, it's across. I mean, you can't, but nobody's ever done what Joe Wilson did to just yell out in a joint session of Congress.
Right.
For you to yell out anything in a joint session of Congress. Right. You wouldn't do that in a school library meeting or something.
You did in my class, so tell you for today.
To make it even, more insulting, this guy was a Southern gentleman and all this other crap. But these people are so disrespectful, it's not even funny. And you're right, it's completely unpatriotic in the extreme.
And that crosses the party lines. I don't care what your party is. Being unpatriotic trumps everything. I mean,
right.
I don't care what you may believe in free love or whatever you want, but you still have you believe for patriotic reasons what you're saying is right. This is just out and out, basically treason or something.
Yeah. No, I mean, you remember under W, they tried to run the Dixie Chicks out of business. They tried to get their record banned, and they tried to get them to leave America just because they said they were embarrassed. And this is just regular people talking. But even by saying they were embarrassed by Bush, they tried to act as if that was treason and the worst thing in all of time. And yet these people are sitting, spitting on members of Congress when they walk by. and yelling at the president and everything else because they don't agree with them. I mean, it's unbelievable the hypocrisy that they have.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing that is going to be, that's going to be difficult about getting
any
teachers,
kind of legislation.
Oh, well, even the legislation. But the NRA now is systematically going to every one of the red states that they won.
Yeah.
And speaking to those 35 or so governors to get this passed.
Yeah.
They're now speaking to Ohio.
They're using the labor plan.
Yep.
Just what they just did with all the right to work and the union busting that they just forced through. And you got to be honest, what they've done in the past with, you know, anti-gay marriage type legislation and anti-abortion language legislation. But they're going to their people in the states and say, hey, let's do it from the bottom up. Let's change the law out from under him and put guns everywhere and then make him try to reverse it, you know.
Well,
look, just today you had Boehner, speaking of not working with Obama. He just is declaring today that he was so hurt by all the bad press he just got that he's
right.
not going to ever work with him one-on-one again. Now, this is the Speaker of the House of Congress telling the world that he's not going to work with the sitting president. So, you know.
That's the same thing that, Newt Gingrich had to do.
Sure.
They wouldn't let Newt Gingrich go up there to see the president by himself. They'd send somebody else up there with him because he said he gave away to half the store
yep.
the last time he spoke.
Well, you remember that. Saying they couldn't let Bush be interviewed without Dick Cheney standing there and holding
right.
it.
Right, well, that's true. Right, and that's true. All right, now that we know that, before we leave that, my grandson, Blake, my youngest grandson, my daughter called me up last night and said that she wanted to talk to me about something. I said, what? She said, well, he's very upset. I said, Blake's very upset. I said, yeah. So because he didn't want to go back to school. This was his first day back, was yesterday.
What?
So I said, why? He said, well, because he was scared. He said, because yesterday they had to go into the closet and sit on the floor and not talk for 10 minutes. She said, because they were running a test. She said, because there might be some bad people coming in. And so she says, well, what were they doing? She says, oh, the teacher said it was a test. So he was upset. So now that this is a Catholic school he goes to, they're even running this stuff through the minds of the kids.
Yep.
And he's in pre-K.
Yeah. But it's indoctrination. This is what they did with my son. It made me so mad. I went and met with the principal and everybody else. Back when after 9/11, they started the whole, you know, lockdown mentality. And CMS started doing lockdown drills, terror drills. And I didn't know anything about it. But my son, Chris, over here at the time, we were right around the corner, the school here. He came home crying because he said, Dad, they locked the doors, turned off the lights. And then the principal went down the hall and beating on all the doors. And they said, we got to hide under our desk because the terrorists were going to kill us. They're coming to get us. And I said, excuse me? And he said, yeah, they did that, and they made us all sit quietly and hide and said that they were going to shoot us in the, you know, if we made a sound. They're going to come and shoot. And I was like, what? And I drove up to the school, and I said, what the heck are you doing? And the principal apologized profusely and said, oh, I had to. I was ordered by the federal government. This was John Ashcroft at the time. He showed me the paper. It even had a script. He was supposed to run around screaming this terror drill, these terror words, banging on every door. So that they, you know, this is when we were doing the color. But that is how you create fear and indoctrination. They were doing that to my child, the first person out here, and that's why it infuriates. Absolutely. Now they backed off that. They don't do that anymore. But now here, your school.
Well,
the new terror. But again, it's a, you know, create your own fear and create your own cycle, and then promote it that way. You know, it's like because we have guns everywhere, we need more guns. Brilliant logic.
What do you think about that, George? With the pre-K, even doing that?
I'm telling you, it's almost inconceivable. If these things, I don't know. I mean, there's nothing you can say. I don't know what to do. I mean, again, this is just, we never thought about, I mean, you didn't build a school and have kids come there and hire a staff and have all this stuff. So then you got to worry about somebody coming down the hall shooting everybody. It's, two ideas don't go together. I don't know. It's just,
why would you want to be a teacher if that was the case?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, well, why would you even want to be a teacher? Now, I know one thing. I'm teaching in class. I taught 9.5 years here. I did this. If I had to think that the, and if I had to think some of these teachers had guns, I'd be more afraid than if the kids had guns.
Yeah.
And the thing, I know we used, in other words, I've seen things where parents and different, and brothers and sisters, and just anybody comes up to the school and they're irate about something, and they, you know, they maybe want to get at a teacher, they want to get at an administrator, they want to get at some kid that bothered their kid and things like that. But you had a margin of time, you had a margin for error because they didn't come up there armed to shoot you. They came up there maybe to throw a punch. They came up there and you could talk to them. You know? You could talk to them. And a lot of times by me being big and stuff like that, I could go in and talk sometimes. Yeah. Like for instance, once there was a woman, she was getting very carried away and irate. And so I came up a little late after this thing started. I walked in and I said, all I said to her was this, and it was, and it wasn't any great plan. I just happened to say to her, well, you know, of that group, your son is not the worst one. That she immediately said, oh, I'm so glad you said that. And she was looking for some way out because she was getting herself worked up about something that happened with her son where he was guilty of something, but she just wanted one word of encouragement, and the word was that, he's not the worst one. That was, she seized onto that. She became very positive after that, and nobody could believe the change in it. But she just needed to talk to somebody different. So, but there was room to talk because she didn't have a gun. She wasn't ready to start blasting coming through the door.
Are you de-escalating?
This thing with and a lot of times physical confrontations happen, but you can usually calm somebody down, or you can explain something to them, or do something. Or get somebody up there and get some reinforcements. But you can't do any of this when somebody's shooting. We're not. If it wasn't a school, it's like the McDonald's. The guy went in San Diego or something when he blew up all the people in the McDonald's. Yeah. I mean, how do you, you know, and like I said before, if they weren't bombing the planes and they were bombing the trains, would that make it better? If they were blowing up the Greyhound bus, would that make it better? It's we're in a society that it's just, I don't know. It's out of
control. Well, you remember, and I remember that line. That's the line from Red October that our reverse mortgage guy sells now. He says because the Russian ship had bumped into American submarines. It's going to get out of control. This is getting out of control, and it's going to cause a war. Well, this is getting out of control, and the war is every day. Yeah. 409 dead since Newton, Connecticut.
Well, and the problem is that one side, you know, makes money by selling weapons. And if you can arm both sides, you can make more and more money.
Well, absolutely. And, no, you know, the weapons people don't want this to stop. They want to sell the weapons.
Of course not. And
but you know, the big thing with this was that something happened that never happened before after Newtown, and that was that the NRA took like 4 days when they didn't say anything. They immediately, I mean, as soon as something happens, they come on with their version. But even they realize that we need, this is not going to sell right away. They waited 4 days or something before they made any statement. That's unheard of with them.
Right, yeah. Right.
Because they knew. But listen, here's my problem even with if you could give them all the training in the world and no teacher ever messed up and accidentally shot somebody or did anything wrong and everything was perfect and wonderful, having guns in school is a disaster waiting to happen. Even if you had everything locked up and the people trained and everything else, kids are curious like cats. They will get into anything. And you know that. I mean, just right before Christmas at my son's middle school, they had two kids got in real bad trouble, got kicked out or whatever, because one of the teachers that brought up new iPhone and some money that they've gotten and all this kind of stuff and was showing it in the classroom or whatever and talking to her teacher friends, And then they locked it up in the special teacher lockup.
Oh, yeah, that the kids all had the key for.
Right. It was all locked down, and the special teacher locked, you know, everything. They went to lunch, and those two kids went in there and broke it open. They jimmied the lock, broke it open, and stole her stuff. Now, they went, called the police, did a search of the school and the parents, found it, got the kids. They all got in trouble, right? But you know that's going to happen with guns. If you have a gun in every room, even if you have it locked in the teacher's drawer or in their locker or wherever, some child's going to get into it. Somebody at recess or at lunch or whenever, when disgruntled XYZ gets mad enough or curious enough, they're going to get a hold of a gun. And then you're going to have a child doing something. It's going to be an unmitigated disaster. How many hundreds of teachers and all do you have in every school? How many guns would that be? I mean, come on.
Well, not only that, but, you know, in New York, what they have what they call a rubber room. It's when teachers have mental breakdowns and they send them downtown to they report to the headquarters, like, and they sit there. And, you know, they just sit there just reading the paper, whatever they want, because they don't trust them to be in front of the kids because of some kind of mental problem. Maybe they're going through a divorce and they're acting erratic. Maybe they just have flipped out. Because, see, when I first moved to Charlotte, I was talking to the head of the personnel department, and he was telling me, he says, well, you know, Mr. Gaffney, you're coming to the 29th largest school district in America. We have 72,000 students. And I told him, I said, well, I'm leaving the largest school district in America. We have 1,200,000 students. He said, we have 5,000 teachers. I said, we have 10,000 administrators, and we have 115,000 teachers, and we have 25,000 secretaries or something like that, office staff. You know, the numbers are just inconceivable. And so when you say like there's always like 70 teachers that are in this rubber room type operation where they don't want them in front of the kids for whatever emotional reasons, their problems they're having. So now you're going to give these 70 people, before they're identified, you're going to give them guns and a school, people break into banks that have time locks and vaults. Yeah. So they're not certainly going to say they can't get into a it's not a priority at school to lock up stuff. You're locking up stuff. What are you locking up? You're locking up an exam before you give it, or you're locking up, you know, the trophy you won at the state tournament or something like that. It's just not built for that. And again, that's the other thing, like you said, about these demonstrations of walking down the hall and pretending there's a riot or fire drill. It's not built for that.
You're right. I used to tell my students that. Those of us going to be honest, I used to say, this is a large school we got here. I said, listen, I have more people live on my block I used to live than are in this entire school. I said, as a matter of fact, I have more people in my classroom than you had in this entire school. They have no conception. Some of these, they have no conception what it is like in a large school system, Chicago, New York, L.A. They have no idea what it's like in Charlotte or Greenville or some backwater place in West Virginia someplace.
At one time, the principal, when I was in Charlotte, the principal of the junior high school couldn't go to a meeting. So he asked me, he said, George, could you go for me? So I went to the meeting, and different people were talking about how they run their schools. And so one person, the last guy to speak, he talked about how we don't have really a big problem with suspensions. He says, I meet with the city student council 3 times a week. You know, I'll bring donuts to the meeting and stuff like that, and we'll discuss problems, and we avert a lot of problems. And everybody was taking copious notes. I mean, people just writing every word this guy said. So I raised my hand when he got finished. And I said, well, can you tell me what's the population? It was a high school. I said, what's the population of your school? He said, we have almost 300 students. This was a high school, 300 students, which means he has like 90 kids, less than 90 kids in each grade.
Right.
You know, that was his thing. So he knows, because he's talking about how he meets with the kids every day and stuff like that, and they bring in donuts. But he's got 300 kids in the total school.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, in New York, the South Shore High School was running. This was because of the construction, but they were running at 8,600 kids in one building. They had two sets of teachers. They had the kids, the teachers that came in from 11, from 7 in the morning till 11:30 or something. Then they had, like, a lot of kids eating lunch so they could transition. The ones that didn't want to stay for lunch would go on home anyway. And then they had the second set of teachers that came in and taught from 11:30 to 5:30 or something like that. There were two complete sets of teachers. Because of construction, they did this for like 3 years. But 8,600 kids went to one high school.
Wasn't Erasmus big in that? Didn't Erasmus have...
Erasmus did it, too. They had a... Erasmus ran at least 6,000.
Yeah, they had three sessions, I understand.
Yeah, well, they doing construction. They have construction stuff, and they, you know, they all do things like that. But... they run at 6,000 and things like that, and you know that's not uncommon. 6,000, 8,006 was pushing it, but still they program things like gym. They have gym periods and things like that, and lunch. And they know that certain kids, if they go to gym, they'll go to gym and go straight home without having lunch and stuff like that, and they can get a break with things like that.
We had talked about this last week or week before, Mike, but even if logistically it could be done and nothing went wrong and everything was hunky-dory with every teacher armed and all this kind of stuff, the cost alone of putting a weapons training, and then all of the safety issues of having to redesign schools and redesign, make glass that wasn't that was bulletproof, that wouldn't let people be shot through the walls, and all the reconstruction of everything that would have to be done, walls and doors and everything else, so that no stray bullet went through 14 classes. The cost is astronomical.
Well, they were given an official cost.
Every teacher
the NRA, LaPierre, that moron, last week said, it ought to be $5 billion. $5 billion?
No,
that's the South Shore High School. Would be $5 billion.
He's just talking about maybe even just like the cost of, a gun to every school. You're talking about hours of training for every teacher. You're talking about redesigning the reconstruction of every schoolroom in America.
That's right.
And these people couldn't even agree to vote for Hurricane Sandy.
Right. Right.
You know, they're mad. They're absolutely mad. It would cost hundreds of billions of dollars. And then you still run the risk of just a flyaway teacher or an angry child getting a gun and killing somebody. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Anyway, the whole thing is so ridiculous on its face. I don't know why we're even having this conversation in America.
It is. It's inconceivable, and you can't deal with it. I'm telling you, you cannot deal with it. It's not like you can't, because you just can't plan for insanity like this.
No.
You know, it's insanity, and it's very hard to... I mean, I don't know if you can just do anything but cross your fingers and just hope. I mean, I don't know. We're talking about insanity. I mean, to go around shooting everybody you see, and I don't know. I could see maybe you're a senior in high school. You've been with these people for 12 years. They're driving you nuts. How do you walk in and shoot kindergarten kids and stuff like that? What do they do to anybody? I mean, I can see you've been taunted for 12 years. The kid goes nuts. I reported the kid once because he wrote these notes that were threatening, and I took it to the principal's office, and that was right after Columbine type thing. And they sent him home, and they had the psychologist talk to him, because this kid was talking about how, well, I know people don't like me because of this and that, and he wrote dangerous. And a police officer at the school, we had a resource officer there. And, he came and he said, no, this doesn't look right. He said, let this guy go home and we'll get the social work out to see him. Because he really was. He was, this kid was venting his frustrations, and imaginary and real. And, things weren't right.
You don't solve that by arming everybody in the room.
Well,
I was going to say, I didn't pull out my own gun.
The thing is now, but this is why Chris Christie had this to say the other day.
It is why the American people hate Congress. It's why they hate it. And Governor Cuomo and I are as frustrated as two people can be, because unlike people in Congress, we have actual responsibilities. If the people of New Jersey feel betrayed today by those who did this in the House last night, then they have good company. I'm with them. Be responsible. Both parties can take plenty of responsibility over time. But last night, my party was responsible for this.
And it comes down to this. These people, Tyler and I were talking about this before, they don't care because they're not involved in it. Their kids, most of them are going to private school. Their kids are hidden away. They don't have to be involved. But you know what? This can happen in a private school.
It can happen anywhere.
It can happen anywhere. This isn't something that's, out of the ordinary. I mean, we're having people. It is just the statistics on these guns violence is just out of hand, and the NRA just does not see there is a problem.
Well, look, we have.
It's either they don't see it or they don't care.
We have
or both.
More guns in this country than any nation on earth, and predictably. We have more gun violence than any nation on earth. We have more murders and more shootings than any nation on earth. And it's because we have a flood of guns. It's simple. It's not any, secret. There's no bizarre, equation behind it. It's a one-for-one ratio. Have gun, we'll shoot it.
Yeah, well.
that's pretty simple.
The thing is that we have a, it's most of these people, who have these guns, if somebody was firing back at them, they would run like scared snakes or cowards with their tail between their legs.
I'm going to mention something just because you said that. There was a guy who made the news a few years ago because he was on a hunting reserve, a high-end hunting reserve where they hunted wild animals. With guns. And you remember they were in cages when it came out? And the only reason it all came out was because he got drunk and blew his friend's face off.
Oh, let's see. Who
you remember this, that
D.C.
But that's the kind of guys we're talking about, who never served, had every deferment under the sun, and then he goes to a exclusive private range and shoots animals in cages and calls that hunting. This is the kind of mentality we're talking about.
Now, I mean, so, the that's about the size of it. If what, I love that commercial with the elk and it's at night and here you see the lion.
Yeah,
and they use a night vision goggles. He said, come on, you're better than this. Get a cake and a bean.
Looking at the lion.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Oh, my God.
So now the shoes on the other foot, they can see him when he's coming. 90% of these people, 90, maybe 95% of them, if someone had a gun in your hand and facing you with that rifle, you drop that thing and run. And, it reminds me of the old quote from Matt Dillon. That's right. Now, there are some teachers that are wacko that would fight back. I've seen a couple.
Okay.
But there are, it's the old thing about Matt Dillon. When he goes out there in the beginning, if you watch it very closely, when Matt Dillon draws at the beginning of Gunsmoke, the guy always beats him to the draw. And the guy's gun goes off first. And so they asked him about that. One of the out there, why did he cut that and make it so his gun fired first? He said, because it ain't the fastest, it's the one who shoots the straightest. And he said, a lot of times, people who are facing you with a gun, they see somebody else facing you with a gun, they have that little click where they don't think.
Yeah.
And these people, I guarantee you, every one of these people who are cowards would not go out. None of them have ever been in the military. None of them. They wouldn't go there or fight somebody that or face somebody that has a gun firing back at them.
Right.
They wouldn't do it. The problem is, though.
Yeah, but you know these little teachers. My mother was a teacher. My grandmother was a teacher. These little old ladies trying to get up and race, while somebody's blowing the door off with an AR-15,
right.
She's going to get her key ring out of her purse and run over to the special gun locker
that you can't remember the combination.
Right. And then load it, because you can't have a loaded gun around children. You know, that's got to be separated. But anyway, she got to load the weapon.
The NRA didn't say
and
that.
Then turn around and shoot the guy. But, you know, oops, too late.
Too late.
That took 10 minutes. You know, it's ridiculous. This whole argument is ridiculous. It's never going to work in any way, any shape, any way.
Okay, we put that to bed. Now I want to get back to the thing that I wanted Mr. Gaffney to tell us about. Tell us about Jingo with a silent D.
Django.
Oh, the Django? Dingo?
Django.
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 So, in the 1966 spaghetti western, and they reworked it so Jamie Foxx as an ex-slave could be the hero. But it was before, I think it was just an Army veteran who had come through the Civil War and took up bounty hunting.
So you mean
Frank O'Neill.
Clint Eastwood could have played this role then.
Yeah. Well, this one, they revamped it, so he has a name.
Oh, he has a name.
But I'm telling you now, the main thing about this picture, the way I looked at it, was this. First of all, Tarantino directed it. Its acting is wonderful. But the main thing is this. The theme of this picture is what makes it work. And the theme of this picture is that these slave owners are so atrocious. Their total disregard for the slaves as being any sort of human beings is just so far out that nothing can make you sit through this picture except the idea that somewhere down the line they're going to have to pay for their behavior.
Uh-huh.
That's the only thing. You don't care about the cinematography. You don't care about the dialogue. You don't care about the acting. It's the fact that these people are so atrocious that they have to pay. And as long as they pay, and I'm not letting out any secret that they will pay, that's what the whole picture is. It's retribution. There's certain acts that just need to be punished. And Jamie Foxx is the agent of that punishment, and he's extraordinarily good at giving out that punishment. And that makes the whole picture. It's nothing else. There's nothing, you know, I didn't think the guy's dialogue was so good. And I didn't think his pronunciation was on target. And I didn't think the costuming was good. None of that matters. The whole thing, it just overwhelms you with sadistic behavior. Just mess with people because you can mess with them. And somewhere down the line, there has to be, you know, you can't, well, we forgive them. God would want them to see the error of their ways. None of that work. The thing is retribution. I said that's my sole theme in this picture.
Yeah.
These people have to pay, and believe me, they do pay.
Well, they all pay. Isn't that a theme, though, in a lot of or most of Quentin Tarantino's films? Retribution?
I don't know if that's a theme.
Well, because Pulp Fiction...
some people see it as the same thing. As they saw that that type of thing in Glorious Bastards, where, you know, the girl was going to blow up the whole theater and stuff like that with the Nazis in it. But not like this. This is worse. I mean, there was, even in Schindler's List, where it was about a concentration camp and the people were brought there to be killed.
Right.
But still... it wasn't this level of treatment. These people were just mistreated.
Well, you know, I saw an interview with Tarantino the other day, back before the New Year. And the guy asked him, he's like, don't you think you should listen to some of the critics? And they said you should tone it down. And he went, tone it down? He said, I don't want to tone it down. It's the truth.
I want to tone it up.
And he said, I intentionally, you know, turned it full volume so that people had no doubt as to what it was like, how they treated slaves. He said it wasn't nice, it wasn't kind, it wasn't anything. It was barbaric cruelty. And he said, I couldn't lie about it. He said the whole point of it is to show how bad it is that the only recourse is Django, what he took.
Well, you know, we were talking, George and I were talking about this before, and I said there were a lot of critics out there, especially, what's the name?
You said Spike Lee.
Spike Lee criticized it. And what was that you were telling me about that, George?
Well, my thing is, people, when they criticize a movie, it's a lot of times what they're criticizing is what wasn't in the movie. In other words, in Lincoln, you know, I knew when I saw Lincoln, I wrote down that I wouldn't say a bad thing about Lincoln. That was my review, was that I wouldn't say a bad thing about it. They did a fabulous job on what they talked about. Now, somebody's going to say, well, Frederick Douglass wasn't in the picture, and he was a great influence on Lincoln. And, well, he wasn't in the picture. Yeah. I'm not going to criticize him for what wasn't in the picture. And, you know, I mean, you could make the picture was 2.5 hours long, and I wrote that I could have stayed there 5 hours if the quality of the picture would have remained the same.
Right.
But you can't, you know, I mean, it's a criticism of, oh, it wasn't in there. You know, well, you talked about my mother's birthday, but you didn't mention my father's birthday. Well, what the hell could I do? I mean, you know, I can't camp out in the theater for 2 weeks while we cover Aunt Sally's birthday and Uncle Joe. What did I put on the screen? How was what I put on the screen? What they put on the screen in Lincoln was tremendous. What they put on the screen in Django was tremendous. And, you know, I mean, and you can criticize what, well, the slaves should have had more of this and that or whatever. I don't know. But I'm saying that I don't know anybody that comes out of that movie, you know, unhappy with what they saw as far as being satisfied that they saw a good picture.
You know? Talk about two different angles, though, on the in the entire slave subject, from Lincoln to Django.
Right.
Well, you know, about coming at it from both directions.
You know, the thing is that, you know, as I was saying before, when we were talking about this before, I said the movie was about November 1964 to April 65. It wasn't about any other time in Lincoln's life or any other time in America or about any other things that were going on in Europe. It was about the Emancipation Proclamation and how Congress and the president worked to get this thing sorted out and passed.
Yeah.
Simple. That. Nothing else. Not about what they had for breakfast. Not about what they had for dinner.
Not about how Jeff Davis had to retire to the plantation.
That's right. What's about that? And, you know, because hey, I would have liked to see, if you want to put more stuff in, I would like to see more of Thaddeus Stevens and his girlfriend, wife, whatever it was. That was that he showed her the.
It certainly wasn't his wife. I would have got away with that.
No, but it was. If you read the story of it, he did marry her. So they were married, and nobody knew that.
Mm.
Nobody knew that. And he adopted her. Now, I'm trying to think, that was her niece's, her nephew's two boys. He adopted them and gave them his name. And when he died, because he was much older than her, he left her the entire, this large estate, but not the house. So what happened was, because she could not own the house until she was free, okay? He had set her free, but in order to ensure that she got the house, he left her all his money, and she bought the house. And then created her own business. She had a boarding room house. She lived a long time, was a very prominent member, and very smart, because he taught her everything. She was smart. And she lived very well after.
And you wouldn't criticize the movie because they didn't show all this domestic stuff. Because it wasn't about that.
It wasn't about that. But
I don't know what you could see in Lincoln that you could criticize.
Nothing.
About what's there. What's there is magnificent.
Absolutely.
It's just, you know, you can have something you wanted to be in there, but you can't. That's not valid.
That's right. It wasn't valid. It wasn't connected to the storyline. But what I liked about Lincoln best of all was, he used, as I said before, he used the same frame of reference that when Christ was teaching when he was 13 and 14 and 23, all the way up to he died, he used parables to tell stories. Why? Because the people were so damn stupid, they couldn't understand him if he talked normal. He had to tell it in, look, three little pigs went to the store. Yeah, and they said, oh, yeah, we understand that now. Well, that's what he did with those morons that he was working with in Congress.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thomas,
yes,
me and Mikey were talking about this earlier, about the thing with parables, and we said, And if you think about it, that's exactly what Bill Clinton did at his speech that night at the DNR, Democratic Convention. That's exactly what he did when he gave that speech, and he just – it was all about painting a picture and letting you see, the situation by telling a story.
Absolutely.
You know.
You know, and the thing is, but Clinton did that all the time.
Yeah, Clinton.
Throughout his two terms in office.
That's why they called him one of the last great Southern orators.
Right.
He's one of those that can talk like a Twain and tell a story.
Hey, as soon as he bit his lip, you know a story was coming out. As soon as he bit his lip, he's going to tell a story. And he tells the story. So the thing is that people and why that is that people can't connect the dots is for a myriad of reasons. But a lot of it is because they're just too damn stupid to understand what this is all about.
Obama needs to start telling some parables for the Congress to follow along.
Well, that maybe that's what he needs to do in his speech. His State of the Union speech. So let me tell you this little story about the three little pigs and the big bad wolf.
With a gun in Newtown.
Yeah, right. I mean, but you're absolutely correct, George. Our cousin in Canada is telling me about the, what's that thing about the wild?
Beast of the Southern Wild. Something like that. About the little girl in Louisiana.
I haven't seen it yet, so I got to order it on.
Yeah, it's like a fantasy type picture of the flooding in New Orleans and stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know.
And what do you think of that?
Well, I had a problem with it because it's very creative and everything like that. It's like these people took their money and they stretched out and they made this story about, these people who are living bad already, and then here comes the flood. They're already living at the poverty, below the poverty line, and then they have the flood to contend with and lose whatever little possessions they have, which were really nothing. So, it was about them, and it was also about this little girl, how she was such a personality that she wouldn't let anything daunt her. You know, the little girl was like the symbol of what could be, because she was always positive. She was always her parents had instilled in her this thing about not crying the blues but moving on and stuff like that. It had a lot of thing to it, but it was done as a fantasy type thing too. But my thing was just that her father was a little bit he was too insane for me, and that bothered me, that I didn't believe this girl could have made all this progress with her father being crazy as he was. He wasn't a bad person, but he was nutty as a fruitcake, and I just didn't, I had problems with that. But it was a very interesting picture, but it's just, I wasn't, I just couldn't get over with the father. I mean, I felt he was just too far out there. It disturbed me that he was as crazy as he was to think that this girl could overcome that. He didn't mean harm, but he was nutty as a fruitcake, alcoholic, and stuff, and I just didn't.
Just
I had problems with that. I couldn't resolve that.
Well, what about the other one that's going to be nominated? The other fantasy one with Tom Hanks is in that. A bunch of stars.
Cloud of the Atlas. Yeah. Cloud Atlas. Atlas Cloud. I love Cloud Atlas. I love the picture. I don't know what the hell it was about. I couldn't tell you what it was. No, it's the idea that what happened with your relatives. You got a great 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 uncle who happened to give a man a ride in his wagon 400 years ago. Well, that man that got the ride ended up getting to where he was going on time, and because he was got there on time, they swore him into the army, and that man became George Washington and changed the whole country. It's like that type of thing, that things that happened hundreds of years ago changed the course of history and affected you. And then so now, 400 years later, your son is the commander-in-chief of the Southern Peninsula or something because of what happened. The person that started all this would have died if it hadn't been for your uncle from 10 generations ago and stuff. I just accepted it. And the other thing was actors. Tom Hanks plays 4 or 5 different roles. Hugh Grant plays 6 different roles.
Oh, my God. They're all
Halle Berry plays 3 or 4 roles, and I think 1 or 2 of them are men. They change sexes. They change things. They put on makeup. But the person continues on these different roles. I thought it was very creative, and I loved it, but I couldn't sit there and explain to you because the connections are flying around, and you have to remember, oh, that's the guy who's his uncle or the cousin or the brother or the sister of the girl 300 years ago. I couldn't keep up with all that, but you could still enjoy it without that. Just like I said about Lincoln, you don't have to understand every little political maneuver that was made.
Right.
You don't have to understand every little maneuver, but you could see overall that he was manipulating things and making deals and doing some corrupt things too. But he was getting this thing over, and you realize how critical it was to have this 14th Amendment made into an amendment and not just a wartime,
a
temporary wartime order. And you can understand that. And the same thing with Cloud Atlas. It's a wonderful picture to me. But again, I said, if you don't accept it in the beginning, you'll hate it. You couldn't stand to sit through it if you didn't, if you don't like it, you might as well just go out and leave to another theater.
It's similar to Inception. If you get past the first level dream, you have to accept the rest of them.
Well, I still don't accept. I mention your name sometimes that anybody can understand Inception.
I love that film.
If it's Tuesday, I know you. Well, you like those rules. If it's Tuesday and it's raining, you can't die. But if it's Wednesday and it's snowing, then 20 minutes becomes an hour, and an hour becomes 5
but
seconds.
But only if you're on the bus.
That's right. Yeah. Only if you're on the bus.
And only if the bus has a power steering and not manual. I don't want all this rule book. You like that stuff.
Well, you see, now, when we saw that movie, Thomas and I, and when Mel was here, we went to see it. He came out and said, "Boy, we like that movie." And Mel says, "I'm still in the first stream." Well, what happened? How did he get to the second stream?
Right. Totally.
Now, here's another thing I said about I said, my thing is, I wrote this in one of the long reviews I did. I said, I like nothing is better than Superman. Superman, 3 rules. He was born on another planet. On Earth, he has superpowers, and kryptonite will kill him. That's it. 3 things. You know that. You can see every Superman picture ever made. There's no version that you can't understand with that. He's not a guy that worked out in the gym and got real strong. You know, he's not a guy that can't die. You know, he's not a guy from around here. So you got those 3 things, that's it, you got him covered. So, you don't have to worry about anything else. Inception, it's snowing, it's raining, if the gun's a 40 caliber gun, you live, but if it's a 22 caliber gun, you'll die. If they shoot you in the head, you'll live. If it's a Wednesday.
Can't die in the dream. Now, if you die in the dream.
Can't die in the dream unless it's snowing in the dream. If it's snowing in the dream, you're
alarm
on
your watch. Oh, yeah. Now, if the alarm on your watch goes off, then you're all right.
That means you're not in the upper dream and you got to wake up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But it's the same thing with The Matrix. It's just that Inception, you went 3 dreams deeper or 4 dreams deeper. I mean, The Matrix, you wake up and you're really not woke up.
It was a machine dream. You know?
Well, the other thing with The Matrix was that the fighting, it can take, you can just watch and enjoy the fighting, whether you know who's fighting or why. Doesn't matter. The fighting is so extraordinary.
Yeah.
But that's
variations of Agent Smith's dream. Well, here's my only thing. Since you mentioned Cloud Atlas, I'll say, because I had to endure reading that book for a book club.
Yeah.
I think Cloud Atlas made a better book because of what he points out. There's so many convolutions in time, following these people's lives, the recurrence of their life throughout time, through all these different characters and everything. It was easier in the book to follow through because you had distinct sections of the book with the characters. And you could go back and reference the name and see it. And whereas on film, it blurs together because you only got a couple hours to try to cram it all in. And you have, thousands of pages of the book.
Like I said before, I did not understand it, but I enjoyed it.
It was a much easier.
I did not understand
the movie.
So that means I got to get the DVD where I can go back and forth with it.
And it might help.
And it would help.
Yeah.
But because see, you wanted, that's what you wanted. You want to do that kind of work. I don't want to do that kind of work. You know, I just like, now, what's the name? What's the picture I just saw? Brad Pitt's picture, Killing Them Softly. My review was, I said, I was watching the picture, I fell asleep, I woke up, and I didn't feel I missed anything, and I would have been happy to go back to sleep to the end of it, because I woke up after sleeping and didn't feel like, oh, well, I missed something. I didn't feel there was anything there while I was sleeping. I felt the time slipping was well worth it.
Wow. That's a harsh indictment. So you said it was lulling them softly to sleep?
Killing them softly. He's a hitman. He's a hitman, and the premise is so silly. Ray Liotta runs a gambling house for criminals. You know, these mafia guys and these gangsters, they gamble at his place. He caters to gangsters gambling their drug money and stuff like that. So in one of his things, there's a robbery. In one of his things with these guys betting all this money on the table, the place is robbed. And so he, you know, they find out a year later or something like that, he gets drunk and he lets it out that he committed the robbery. He was in on the robbery. So he let them rob his game. He was part of the people who robbed these gangsters. And he's telling this to people, and it's like, oh, well, that wasn't nice. And then they just go about their business. And he does it again. It happens again. The second time, I'm not sure if he's in on it. But it didn't make any sense. I mean, you steal from Al Capone or somebody, and then you tell him, oh, yeah, I stole your car, your money, and so on. Yeah. You know, like, it's like, oh, okay. It's okay. Bob did it. Bob can steal from us. We don't care. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, well, yeah. Gee,
thanks for spoiling the movie for me. There it was.
Believe me, I did you a favor to tell you. I slept. Go there and sleep.
That's one of the only movies that I saw that Brad Pitt was in that I didn't think I wanted to see. There was something about the trailer. Mm-hmm.
He pretends. I mean, he goes around.
Is it a comedy?
It's supposed to be very serious. Oh, but to me, he went around like he was some kind of mastermind. It's like he figured out that if you pull a gun on somebody, they get scared.
Yeah.
It's like, you know. Yeah, you know, and if you got a gun on them and you tell them to do something, they do it. It's like this is all revelatory to him. That this is like, yeah, okay. You pull a gun on somebody, you have the upper hand. They do what you say. I don't know. It was trying to copy the Friends of Eddie Coyle, a picture made by Robert Mitchum, where a guy was he was caught by the police, so he ratted out his friends to keep from going to jail himself. He ratted out his friends. This is kind of like based on that type of thing, but they didn't pull it off.
The hitman wasn't like the Timothy Elephant hitman then.
Well, you know, the thing about it is this. Put it this way: the picture's been out for 2 months, and you don't know the name of it, and you haven't heard anybody talking about it. I said, I said, this is a picture where you're not going to hear anybody talk about it because nobody wants to admit that they went and saw it. You know, that's true. And the picture's bad. You don't want to tell your friends. If Django was bad, I wouldn't be sitting up here talking about, yeah, go Django. I'd be like, oh, no, I don't know anything about it because you don't want to admit that you were taken. This picture, nobody ever said a word about that picture. You didn't know the name of it.
Yeah.
It's a Brad Pitt picture, but nobody knows it because it wasn't good.
It's not like all of those movies.
Did Angelina go see it?
Well, no, it's like all of those movies that Nick Cage does.
Oh, yeah.
No one knows the name of our boy.
Well, he can make one every 6 weeks.
Well, that's because he doesn't have to act.
The last thing I saw him in is he was crashing in a plane in Vegas.
He had the fire thing where the Knight Rider thing where his motorcycle turns on fire.
Well, I think he was a car thief or something in one movie.
He's gone in 60 seconds or something where he's got to steal 60 cars in 2 days. But they all got to be foreign imported cars and stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, good. Well, all right, Mr. Gaffney. It was great for your insights into how to handle a gun as a teacher.
Yes.
In,
shoot everybody and go home.
Well, and go home.
Don't forget to punch out.
And don't forget to punch out or you won't get paid for it. Out there. How many criminals you shot?
Do you get overtime for cheating?
Yeah. Oh, is that an overtime? They might have to put that in the contract.
Special circumstance.
They'll put that in the contract. Now, if you happen to kill the perpetrators, you get X amount. If you wound
them,
that's
a bonus.
Get X amount.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's a bonus and a promotion.
And the promotion.
I think the lesson
especially
today.
Especially to take out the principal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then you'd be having these teachers will be hiring people to come in to shoot the principal.
Exactly.
Holy cow. It gets worse.
The lesson really is, so guns and all that violence, let's keep it on the film and not.
Well, the NRA says it's the records and the movies. Yeah. Meanwhile, they never said anything when Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger were killing people by the thousands in all their movies.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, well, what's the story here? They want to ban birth control. They want to ban everything else, but they don't want to ban Arnold.
Yeah, I don't want to be obvious either, but, you know, slavery was around when there wasn't any Django film. I mean, which caused what?
That's right.
Give me a freaking break.
Okay.
Well, all right, gentlemen. I'm signing off. Take it easy.
Thank you.
The show for today. Thank you, Mr. George Gaffney. You can read his weekly column at Big Gaff. What's the
Big Gaff 2. BigGaff2.blogspot.com.
That's right.
All right. Take care, George.
And
okie doke.
Greenville, what's that? The Greenville, what's the name of the newspaper? The Greenville what?
It's the Greenville News and also the Greenville Link magazine. It's in the Greenville Link magazine and Greenville News.
All the movies you should see and the ones
you should avoid.
Like the plague.
Most important are the ones you should avoid.
Hey, in this tight economy, you need to pick and choose well.
Absolutely. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, until next time. And everybody, just make sure that when you're out there driving around and you see somebody who's sitting by himself, not bothering anybody, just looking down at the ground, don't think that person is someone you need to help. Because it could be Jason Bourne. And you know what happened to those two policemen that tried to get Jason Bourne up from the park bench. This has been The Last Word. Michael Lawson, Thomas Fortenberry. See ya next week.
Welcome to 2013.
Like a fan, I would stand in line for this. There's always room in life for this.
thing that happened before 2 weeks ago.
Again.